But no, Brian had never been to a hibachi place before.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you got to experience it firsthand. That's fun. All right. You ready?
I can be ready.
You better get ready because this is happening.
Get ready for some football,
That's right.
I
You ready for
guess.
some real food?
That's how we started
Arby's.
last
No, I'm just
time.
kidding. I know, right?
Oh God.
It is Hardee's, yeah.
Yes, I have this, I have that, you have that.
I have these.
You have double vessel situation
I'm
going on
vesseled
there.
up, man.
All right, we got levels. You're plugged in. The lights are on this time.
Yep.
Excellent. Yeah.
All right.
TCB.
Let's do it. Welcome, everybody, to episode number 128 of the Goulet Pencast, where fountain pens are still a thing. I am Brian Goulet.
And I'm Drew Brown.
And we're here from Goulet Pens to deliver this casual and informal, tangential and extraneous, superfluous and extemporaneous fountain pen show where we talk about what's going on at the Goulet Pen Company and in our fountain pen lives. In today's show, we're going to be talking about pens with the Japanese eyedropper mechanisms, our favorite notebooks for traveling, if German pens are a thing of the past, which two inks that we would combine to make our dream inks, good starter pens for line drawing, and we're going to be spotlighting my Lamy 2000 collection.
All too many of them.
Because we got asked about it, not because I just want to show you, but maybe a little bit. Let's start it off with some feedback.
That's a great idea. So we discussed gray inks last week, and there was
Good.
No shortage of agreement and suggestion in the comment section on
Cool.
YouTube. And a lot of love for Earl Grey, which we knew is a super,
Yeah.
possibly the most popular gray ink out there. But also a lot of fans of Fuyu Shogun. And
Yeah.
not surprisingly, but like enough that I am reminded that I need to use that again.
Yeah.
Because it has been years.
Yeah.
Like years, years. Oh, yeah, for
Before
sure.
you use it? I
Yeah.
mean, yeah, it's been around for
When I first started
forever.
working here, I feel like I was just all aboard the Orochizuku train
Oh, yeah.
because we had samples and I knew that like those were like the fancy inks, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So I wrote with a lot of them and then I just kind of like stopped. And I don't know why. It's just more stuff came along, I guess, but
Yeah, I mean,
I need to get back on Fuyu Shogun. But surprisingly, someone recommended Monteverde Smoke Noir. And a bunch of people commented, like, yes, came here to say this.
Really?
Smoke Noir. Right?
Okay.
So that, as far as an underrated gray ink, like, we might be, you know, where there's smoke, there may be fire.
Oh.
As they
I like that.
So I'm gonna get
Smoke
I'm gonna
Noir.
get down on some Smoke Noir.
I gotta look that up.
And
Yeah.
then
I don't know that I've ever inked this up before.
I don't think I have.
I mean,
it does look
it looks
really
like a good color.
nice. It looks really nice. So I'm gonna load that bad boy up, and I might also try Coffee Break by Colorverse because I was also talking about my pursuit of a perfect brown.
Yeah,
and someone recommended Colorverse Coffee Break. It's got the word coffee in it. That's got good vibes. So
Yeah.
it looks pretty solid. So I think I'm gonna ink up those two. So thank you so much for the recommendations. If no one else in the comments section appreciates them, we definitely do. So I appreciate that.
Nice.
And then Marvin Mediocre writes in to say that we were talking about cursive in schools.
Yeah.
Marvin says, California will require mandatory cursive instruction for third through sixth grades beginning with the 2024 school year. I haven't heard anything about requiring the use of fountain pens, but as a substitute teacher, I often show students my pens and tell them a bit about them. So I did do a quick Goog on this, and it
Yeah.
does indeed seem like it is a mandated California state law for
Yeah.
cursive to be officially added to the curriculum there. So
Yeah.
that surprised me.
Yeah.
I wasn't really expecting such a, you know, broad, you know, legislation to happen statewide too. And
well, especially in California.
Yeah.
It's a huge state.
Huge
that,
state.
You know,
so that's
lots
a
of
that's
mandate.
a big deal.
That is a big deal.
So that's
Yeah.
not it's not Rhode Island.
I'd read some like articles and stuff about various states that are receiving kind of so much like grassroots, you know, feedback from people, you know, people writing their legislators and like really demanding for cursive to be back in schools that, you know, it's starting to happen in some states, and California is a big one.
That's pretty surprising. So I
Yeah.
didn't know that. So yeah,
might
thank
be
you.
Something to look into.
Marvin,
I
I
mean,
don't think you're mediocre. I think you're great.
if ever there was a reason to write your legislature getting cursive back in schools, it would probably be the most fitting topic that you could write
It's
about,
a
right?
lot of you write in you know, pretty frequently and say, what should I do with my fountain pens? What's a good idea? How should I use my fountain pens?
Mm.
Write your local government ask them to get cursive.
They are required to open up all those letters.
Are they really?
Yeah.
How about that? I mean,
I had a friend, my roommate in college, he was a law, or he wanted to go, he's a lawyer now, but he wasn't in law school because I didn't go to law school, but he was political science, I believe. And then he went to law school, but he did some internships at some law firms. And he said that he did an internship in DC with a senator's office or something like that. And he said that that's part of the reason that they know that people are interested in stuff is when they just get a lot of letters, their staff has to open all of them and it just takes a ton of time. So they are more likely to do the things that take up all their time.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So it's a real thing.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, Faniro writes in and says, very interesting show indeed. I enjoyed very much the competition between the pens with Drew's brackets.
Mm-hmm.
Hand waving emoji. A lot of fun. Please do more in the future. Cheers. You know, I've told you this off camera. Very proud of you, Brian, because that whole bracket, you decided shockingly quick on, you know, who in your opinion deserved to move on to the next bracket.
Well,
I was
put on the spot and I just made a choice. And
I was prepared to spend more time on that than we actually ended up
doing.
Okay,
fair enough. Well, I'll keep that in mind for next time.
No. You did great. You did great. That is a compliment. And, you know, obviously it was no surprise that the Lamy 2000 won, but it would be interesting to kind of shake it up a little bit and see if maybe the pattern, you know, in where I had placed certain competitors could have
there was a goal or a topic to it, you know, if it was best value pen or best pen for beginners, best pen for, you know, something, if there was some kind of superlative direction to point it into.
Yeah, we could definitely do that again. It doesn't have to be March Madness.
Yeah, we're open to ideas.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. That's it for me.
All right. I got one from Soyokazi. Says, whoa, I'm here early. I was just watching. I don't know what that means. I was just
comment
watching.
Section.
Oh, yeah. Must be an early comment. I was just watching the Banu video. Drew and Brian G, while we're at it, will you please consider making some more merch, like a Pencast themed shirt or hoodie? I'd rock that thing so hard. Anyway, love you guys. Thanks for all you do. We haven't done, I mean, we've done stickers.
Yeah, I wonder, I don't even know, we haven't even looked to see how the stickers sell.
I don't.
I don't even know if they're popular.
I mean, the ones that, in the early Pencast days, I'm not even sure if we still offer these, but we had Teespring, which is through.
No, Teespring's
on the
dead.
New thing. Okay. So we had that for a while, which that was kind of easy because you would just upload a logo and it would you know, put it on stuff and you would order it and then it would get made and then it would get shipped to you. And we didn't have to stock it and manage all that.
Yeah.
So we could come up with goofy ideas on here and not put a bunch of extra work on the rest of the team. So doing merch would be a little more involved.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I guess the thing to look at, if the Pencast sticker is insanely popular, which it's probably not, a mug or a t-shirt would make sense, I don't know. It's worth getting feedback on if y'all, you know, feel super strongly about it.
We're definitely not opposed to
too much. No. We want to get people what they want, but it's got to be worth it.
Yeah.
So
we're open to it.
Yeah.
We'll give it some thought. We'll give it some thought for sure. All right. Next one, we got Gummy Bear says, thanks to Brian's Frankenmeals idea, I have begun mixing my cereals instead of choosing one and waiting before starting the next one. I'm working on a huge bag of Cheerios. Woodman's sells these and started mixing with Corn Pops. It helps me justify the candy cereal if I add healthy cereal to the mix. Tastes pretty good too. Thanks for the idea. It's exactly what I do. I take healthy cereal like Grape Nuts and Cheerios and I mix it in with slightly less healthy stuff, you know, like granola that has chocolate in it and stuff like that, you know.
What about marshmallow cereals? Do those enter your house?
We'll get them every now and then for the kids, especially if their cousins are coming over for a week or something like that. We'll get some goofy cereal. But as a standard rule, I've never been that big on marshmallows in my cereal, you know. But I mean, Lucky Charms are what immediately comes to mind.
Yeah.
But I, as a kid, I would like to just pick the marshmallows out of Lucky Charms, just like every kid pretty much does. But I didn't like the marshmallows in the milk. Because they get all slimy.
They do get slimy.
And then they make your milk taste weird. I'm not big on that. So, yeah.
But that would be, in my opinion, that's the most treat-like cereal. So adding Lucky Charms to like a healthier alternative, I think would make sense. Would make me feel better about it anyway. But then again, if you look at the nutrition facts on those things, they're all terrible.
They're
for
all
you.
Bad. Yeah, yeah. There's not.
And you know what? I recently looked at a box of Pop-Tarts, unfrosted strawberry Pop-Tarts, more calories than frosted cherry Pop-Tarts.
Really?
Yeah. Like, what sense does that make? I'm sure one has way more sugar, obviously, but...
Interesting.
But, like, what? What?
Couldn't tell you.
I just, you know, sometimes you just got to give up.
We had a big debate in our house because we bought some Pop-Tarts recently. We don't normally buy that, but I guess we did. We being Rachel. Kids were debating, should they be untoasted or toasted, and which is better?
You know why they call them Pop-Tarts, right? It's because they pop out of the toaster. They're supposed to be toasted.
My kids don't toast anything.
Oh my
I'm
God.
Like, what is wrong with you kids?
Monsters.
Like, toast your bread. Like,
it makes it better.
Joseph calls it untoasted toast. And I'm like, that's just bread. It's a joke. Because literally my kids will just grab like two pieces of cold bread out of the bag and call that breakfast. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? What are you doing?
Wow.
So I'm like, eat a banana. Eat something real. Like...
Have they ever had a peanut butter and banana sandwich?
No, that is not recently.
That is a life-changing moment.
I'll have to kick that
I did not have one as a kid. I was an adult before I had a peanut butter
and banana. I definitely had peanut butter and banana as a kid.
I wish that I had.
Man, you're missing out.
I was. I mean, now I'm like all about it.
You know
peanut
butter
and banana, baby.
You know what Rachel would make?
Oh, man.
You know what a sandwich Rachel would make as a kid?
No.
Not even a kid, as like a teenager.
Oh, God.
It would be peanut butter and chocolate chips and marshmallows.
Wow. So a Fluffernutter.
I think it was peanut butter. Was it? Maybe it wasn't peanut butter. Maybe it was Nutella. Either peanut butter or Nutella. I can't remember the base, but then chocolate chips and marshmallows.
Wow.
And she was like stick thin. And I was like, yeah.
That's not fair.
You have a different metabolism than I do.
Yeah.
Because I've looked like this most of my life. Anyway, we are way off topic here. But speaking of Frankenmeals, I had a bowl of random stuff for lunch today.
Do tell.
Would you like a report?
So yes.
Some leftover like... It's like a hamburger meatloaf type thing from last night.
Was this in a bowl?
It was in a bowl.
Okay, in a bowl.
And some potato like spears, you know, just like potato wedges.
Okay.
Homemade. And then some leftover corn from a different meal. And I just threw it all in one bowl, heated it up.
You heated it up all together?
I heated it up all together. I had to take the meat out and do that a little longer because the corn cooked a little faster than the meat.
But yeah.
It all worked.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't like mixed together totally, but it was, you know, I didn't want to dirty up more than one.
It got to know each other.
I didn't want to dirty up more than one container.
Fair enough.
Anyway, Crystal CA says, Brian, LaCroix actually makes a surprisingly good float. We were talking about my kids wanting to make root beer floats with other drinks.
And orange juice.
And orange juice.
Orange juice and LaCroix.
Ellie claimed was good, but she is not a trustworthy source. I did the limoncello with lemon custard from Culver's, and it was delicious. The carbonation gives it that fluffy, bubbly effect that you get with a soda float, but the ice cream gets to shine without being sweetened even more by corn syrup. Well, that's interesting. You know, I was dogging on that, but I never gave it a shot. So
someone in the comments
amazing.
Said that Ellie unintentionally created the Orange Julius.
Oh.
Which I don't know what an Orange Julius is.
Is that a mixed drink?
I've seen Orange. Their logo outside of a Dairy Queen, but I don't know what it actually is.
Oh, it's
a brand.
It's a company.
Yeah. I think they used to have their own location. Now they're just kind of like mushed into Dairy Queen, but I'm not really sure.
Original.
It's a drink of some sort.
Let's see here.
Yeah.
Real orange blended together with a secret ingredient. That's not helpful.
Maybe it's LaCroix.
It looks like somebody... yeah, maybe. It looks like a frost-up orange fizzy soda thing.
Interesting. They're not unpopular, I think.
I don't think we have any of those around here.
I think I've seen a couple.
Oh, visit DQ.com. Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Dairy Queens are not as big as they used to be as a kid. I remember going to Dairy Queen as a kid more.
You still see Dairy Queens around, like, you know, if I go to certain parts of Virginia where there's really not a whole lot else, you know, in the mountains, Southwest Virginia.
There's not a lot of other good options.
No, Dairy Queen and Hardee's, for whatever reason. Dairy Queen and Hardee's, they get out there, like, into the sticks.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
When you're ready for some real food.
That's everybody's slogan now.
That's it for the feedback. Let's talk about new stuff. All right. You ready to get stacked?
Sure.
Because we got some stacked resins.
Ah, yes.
Coming up on the Magna Carta 600, Mag 600. This is cool. You don't see a lot of stacked resins these days.
No. Nope.
The only resins that we've really seen stacked in anything recently has been like the Peniter Arcos, which are like stacked, but it's thicker pieces and it's more like long ways.
Yeah, yeah.
These are stacked tall ways, short ways.
Yes.
Whatever. Those are opposite. I don't know which one is which, but it's basically like concentric rings that go around the pen. Is the
looks effect very, that it very looks vintage-y. Like. It's stacked
it's
the way
definitely vintage-y.
Vintage celluloid used to be stacked.
Yeah, yeah. Think about like the, what was it called? Parker did it, the Vacumatic or the Parker, no, there was like a Parker... There was a Parker material that was commonly known for that.
Okay.
That we had some celluloids. We did a pen a long time ago with Visconti called the Wall Street that had that celluloid. That was really cool. So this is not celluloid. This is just resin, acrylic resin. But it has that stacked effect. And basically, there's no way to fake that. Like, you have to literally, like, pour super thin layers of that resin, you know, or I guess you pour whatever thickness, but then you cut it into little strips. You got to glue it all together, and then you have to turn the pens so that the rings are not like all wonky and stuff like that. So to get them like straight across like that, it is surprisingly hard to do that. So we're pretty excited to be able to offer this. And we thought that it kind of made sense on the Mag 600 because it's kind of a vintage-y pen as it is. So it is going to be sold at a little bit of a premium. Normally that pen's $350. So these will be $420. So it's a little bit more because it's so much extra work to do these resins this way. We're only going to have 50 of each color. So we're going to see if y'all are interested in them. And I believe that there are other potential colors that we could do if the demand was there, but we started with these ones. We'll see how they do.
Hearing from Magna Carta, the owner, there's really nothing he won't try. So
yeah, he presented us with like 12 colors and we were like, that's a
lot. He loves to explore and experiment.
Creative.
And all of these will have the Magna 600, what I like to call Magna Flex. It's not official, but it's the...
He's trying to make it happen.
I'm really trying to make Magna Flex happen. I think
grab your letters. Let's send them to Hearin.
Send one to your senator and send one to Hearin at Magna Carta.
There you go.
They will have, you know, just the flex nib on these.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yes.
It's an amazing nib.
That's what you want.
The three colors that we have, Chariot, is that how you pronounce it?
I think it's Karawite, but I really don't know.
Oh, that is totally different than what I said. Either way, it's a purple color. It looks really cool. Then we have Obsidian. I'm just kidding.
That's it.
Obsidian. That's a gray, grayish black color. And then Azure, which is blue, which is the best. So you should get that one. I'm just kidding. Actually, they're all really pretty cool colors in their own right. I genuinely don't know which one I like more. Maybe the gray. I feel like the gray one looks the most vintage. So I'm a little more drawn to that. But the blue and the purple are really cool. And it makes it look like this is a new thing.
The purple is unlike anything I've ever seen.
It is really cool.
It's definitely not something that harkens back to the vintage, but it kind of like, hey, this is kind of vintage, but with a totally new spin.
And I will say, as much as I'm a fanboy with all things blue, not every blue gets my motor cranking the exact same way. This blue is not like totally hit the bullseye blue for me.
Yeah, I think
it's still great blue.
The gray definitely, it looks so sleek. And the every other stack looks, you know, different. It's not like, and it has this shine. So it's like flat shine, flat shine, flat shine. And you get more of that with the gray, a little bit less of it with the blue, even less of it with the purple.
Yeah.
With the purple, it's more like purple, pink, purple, pink, purple, pink in a lot of ways.
Because there's like pearlescent in there in every other stack, every other layer. But then as you turn the pen too, you're basically looking at a different direction of it.
Yeah.
So it's like sparklier in one direction, but then not as much in the other, but they're all kind of stacked randomly. So as you turn the whole pen, they're just like glittering and glowing.
You'll see. We'll put pictures up for you so you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
They're pretty rad. So we got those. And then we have a spiritual successor to one of my all-time favorite pens.
That's right.
The Traveler's Company. This is a refillable rollerball version of my beloved little pocket pen. It's all brass, so the construction is still the same. In fact, the whole pen is identical. It's really just you're pretty much swapping out the nib unit. Instead of a fountain pen, you're putting in a refillable rollerball tip. So you can still use not a converter because it won't take any converter, but you can use a cartridge. You can refill a cartridge or use a standard international cartridge of your choice. And if you already have a Traveler's brass pen, like yours truly, and you don't want to have to buy a whole other pen, you can just get that rollerball tip. So, you know, it's pretty easy. Basically, you just unscrew the whole nib unit out. It just literally threads right in there. You replace it with the rollerball, and then you can try it out because, you know, refillable rollerballs are not for everybody. I've been known to say that it's the worst of both worlds sometimes, but this one's actually not too bad. I'm maybe sometimes a little hard on the refillable roller balls, but this one could be a good compromise because it's such a good pocket pen that it might be worth considering. So the pen itself is $69. The refillable rollerball tip is $17. So I don't know. It's like the same price as basically any other replacement nib, maybe even less that you would get for any other fountain pen. So my opinion is if you already have one of these, go ahead and give it a try because it's worth trying out. So that's what I got.
Yeah.
How about you, Drew?
I'm only going to mention one pen today, and that is the Delta DV Original in slim size. So this is our third size of the DV Original. The Original meaning it's the orange one that we're all familiar with. So we did the regular one, then we did the oversized one. Now we're going two steps back and we're doing the slim one. This one is my favorite.
What?
I like it. It's small.
You like the little
one
the most.
It's fun. It feels really balanced when posted. Mm. Yeah, it is my favorite.
You don't think the big one feels balanced when posted?
I don't know. Kind of. I tell you, the big one is pop. It is comfortable. Like with
it
that
is,
massive grip
is.
Section, it actually feels really comfortable. Like writing with one of those like comically oversized pencils you get at amusement parks in the 90s.
It does kind of feel like that, yeah.
So this one's $220. So definitely, you know, the most affordable one of the three as well. Mm-hmm. And you still do get, here's what I love. You still get a number 6 Yovo steel nib. I was thinking it might jump down to a number 5, but it doesn't.
You know, they didn't used to have that size nib on the old slim Dolce Vitas. It used to be smaller.
Yeah, it probably wasn't number 5.
I don't recall because
it would have been Bach at that
time. I'm also thinking about it was Bach.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about the mini, not the slim. The slim is like...
There's a mini too?
There was a mini that was smaller.
I think
that one had a number 4 size
nib,
maybe?
Okay. Well, either way, I was surprised that this still had a full-size number 6 nib, same as the... mid-size had an 8, right?
The mid now has an 8, yes.
Okay.
Right?
Anyway, it's a great, well-balanced pen. It looks good. And I also learned that DV is short... So DV is short for Dolce Vita, and Dolce Vita is translated from Italian as sweet life.
Yes.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
I mean, Dolce, I know, is like desserty. I knew it was frequently used within that realm, so I could have like ascertained that. But yeah, Vita, life. Actually, no, I guess I kind of did know that. Just never put it together.
Living that sweet life.
Yeah. Dolce Vita. Anyway.
There you go.
All right. That's it for the new stuff.
Cool. A couple quick company updates, and then we can get into the Q&A. All right, so we do have a video that came out this week. If you enjoyed our previous pen battle between the Lamy Safari and the Twisby Eco, we went a little higher brow on this one, and we went with the Visconti Homo Sapiens versus the Sailor King of Pens. Not a pen that I think is like a matchup that I think is too oft compared directly.
No.
So we thought it was an interesting matchup. A little more... niche, a little more specific. So I'm very curious what you all think about this one compared to the first one that we did. So.
And by the time that this video is public, there will be a poll out on our YouTube community page where you can weigh in and add your voice to the masses and let us know whether or not you prefer the King of Pen by Sailor or the Homo Sapien by Visconti.
There you go. And then next week, we will have a special treat because my kids are on spring break. So we're doing some family stuff. So Janaea is going to be sitting in for me
right there
hosting with Drew. So that should be fun. If y'all enjoyed her meet the team segment that we had a few weeks back, she'll be sitting here doing the whole dang thing. So,
and the plan is to also have a meet the team for next week too. So
it'll
be a nice bouquet of variety.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love feeling like I can make some family time and things still keep on trucking.
I will put somebody in that
feeling.
Seat. I'll find somebody.
That's right.
Even though I have to put a bunch of little Reese's Pieces out here as a trail to get them in.
You know, that might do it. That might do it.
Worked with E.T.
That's right. All right, that's it for company stuff. Let's do a little Q&A, shall we?
Let's. All right, kicking things off today is Beck 11 Mort.
Mm.
And Beck asks us, other than Opus 88, what modern pens use the Japanese eyedropper mechanism?
Is this the Japanese eyedropper mechanism? Like,
that's what
I had to think about it.
That's
for
what
a
it's referred to as.
Is it?
Yeah, I've heard it referred to as Japanese. Well, let's first talk about what are they talking about? What is Beck talking about here?
So essentially, if you look at, I mean, it's probably easiest to see this on the Opus 88 demonstrator. So if you look at that, and we can throw a picture up here, it has a knob with a rod attached to it that you can unscrew, and you move the rod and you're like, what is this? Is this a piston? Is this a vacuum? No, it's neither of those things. Essentially, that rod is there to basically just block the ink reservoir from the front section of the pen. So
it's like a stopper.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Basically, yeah, exactly. It's like a stopper. So, you know, you have that same functionality on a vacuum filling pen. But on this one, there's no seal around the end of the stopper to give it any sort of like vacuum action. It's just an eyedropper fill pen with a stopper that you can use so that as you're carrying around this gigantic load of ink in your pen, you have to worry less about like burping and stuff like that, because that tends to happen when you get very large volumes of ink in a pen. The Opus 88 one is the one that's most visible because you can actually see through the pen and see what's going on with that mechanism. The only other pen that I can think of that has that same type of mechanism is the Namiki Emperor. But it's almost the opposite, because you can't even tell that that thing has a knob, let alone you can't see through it, because obviously you want to see the pen, because that's like the whole point of the Emperor. So that has a similar kind of action. So you can unscrew the knob and pull it out and do all that kind of stuff. Other than that, I could not think of a single pen that has that same type of mechanism.
Not identical. The Opus 88 and the Emperor have more or less identical Japanese style filling mechanisms. The only other thing I could think about was the Diplomat Nexus, because that has a rod and it has a stopper.
It does.
But you don't operate its movement
at
all.
You don't unscrew a knob or anything. It's more like an automatic.
It is, yeah. So it's like an automatic Japanese eyedropper, maybe?
Sort of.
It's definitely in that realm. Like if you wanted to put it in a bucket, it's not going to go into a regular eyedropper bucket. It's not going to go into a cartridge converter vacuum. It will go into that genre if it needs to be in one.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely an eyedropper.
Yeah.
But it definitely
has a built-in stopper that is attached to a rod. So the only difference is it, like you said, it's automatic. It plugs your grip section on its own rather than you having to do it with a knob.
Yeah, it's like the mechanical action of capping the pen kind of shoves that grip section down onto the rod. So the rod is fixed on the Nexus, and the grip section of the pen is what's being pushed back down onto the rod. So it basically locks it. I mean, honestly, it's kind of the best of both worlds, because it locks it while you're carrying it around. But then when you go to write with it, you don't have to worry about unscrewing a knob or anything like that. You just get the full access to the inside of the pen. So
it's a really cool design.
It is a cool design, and that is unique to Diplomat. So I guess you could sort of maybe put it in that camp,
like,
but
two and a half. Yeah.
It's their own variant that they did of it, and they're German. They're not Japanese. So I don't know that I could call it a Japanese eyedropper.
Yeah.
But well, the spirit of it is kind of similar.
It's probably the style of it. It might have been created, you know, by the Emperor for all I know. I really am a little ignorant here, but what Beck is asking, you know, comparing it to Opus 88. Yes, the Namiki Emperor is exactly like the Opus 88 as far as its filling situation goes. You drop it, and then you can plug it or unplug it as you see fit using a rear knob. Mm-hmm. So, yes, definitely those two. And then there's the Nexus, which is the same thing, but you don't have to unscrew any knob to get the process done.
Yeah.
So as far as I know...
There must be a more extensive like vintage.
Yeah, I'm sure that these are the three that we can think of that are currently available. We're certain that this is not a new invention. There was probably, you know, dozen that have come and gone over the years that used this system.
The first I was ever aware of it was from the Emperor.
Yeah,
because that's what we carried that. But I have not seen it many more other places. But I'm curious if y'all, especially those of you that are into more vintage pens, if you know of like maybe what was the origin of this sort of filling mechanism and what was the... you know, some of the brands or maybe models that it was used on. I'm really kind of ignorant of this, and I didn't. Maybe this was an opportunity to do a deep dive.
No, I don't think so. I wasn't expecting that, but it's a topic that we don't discuss often, and it's a filling type that we don't discuss often.
Yeah,
and a lot of it flies under the radar. Some people think that, you know, it's for like cleaning or agitating the ink inside the reservoir.
No.
Some people think it's a piston and it's just not working right. But yeah, it's
one of those things.
It's just a plug on a rod.
Mm-hmm.
It's unique. What do you think about that filling mechanism? Like, are you a fan? Do you think it's a bit unnecessary?
It feels weird to me calling it a filling mechanism.
Yeah.
Because it's a mechanism.
The mechanism itself is not used for filling, though.
Right.
So it's just an eyedropper, but the mechanism is used to just... it's really plug and release.
It's a plugging mechanism.
It's a plugging
is mechanism. All that it is, yeah. Really. So it's not really a filling. I don't know.
No.
Is an eyedropper a filling mechanism? Because
I would say it's a filling method.
Ooh.
Rather than a mechanism.
That is a more technical term. Yeah. I feel more comfortable calling it a filling method than a filling mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I like it well enough. I appreciate how easy they are to clean.
Yeah, they're very simple. There's like nothing to maintain. There's nothing really to worry about. And I would say like, especially on, because these are all larger pens that we're talking about here. That's really where it matters the most. I think that like, it's a little bit of hassle because you do have to unscrew that knob every now and then, mm-hmm. but
except for the Nexus.
Right. Except for the Nexus. You don't have to worry about that. But I will say it's not as bad as you would think that it would be, because it's not like you have to unscrew the knob every time you write with it. Basically, you unscrew the knob, for a little bit and just let some of the ink kind of go down into the, kind of like Viscani when they have their double reservoir power filler. That's kind of somewhat similar. I mean, that's a vacuum filling pen.
Yeah, or even the A23 of the VAC 700, really.
Yeah. I mean, the VAC 700 doesn't really have another reservoir there. You're pretty much just like whatever's in the feed. But the idea is whatever's in the feed or in whatever little reservoir that might be there, you're kind of filling that by mm-hmm. unscrewing the knob. And then you can basically seal it back up. And then you can go writing with it. And I remember doing some tests like way back in the day with, I think it was a custom 823. I think I wrote like 10 pages or something like that with a medium nib before that thing dried out. So it's like, you can write for a while without having to deal with that.
And this is just what's in the feed.
This is just what's in the feed. There wasn't even like an extra reservoir really on the 823. So, I don't think it's something that like, unless you're just writing a ton, you don't really have to worry about it that much.
I wish that they would make a smaller barrel filling pen because I don't mind the method. I just don't need all that ink.
That's a ton of ink. Like Opus 88 to make one? Or are you just saying in general?
Opus 88, or honestly, I would love a Nexus Mini. I would, if I had my way,
Nexus Mini.
I would love that because I think that pen is so much fun. Now, granted, they probably just can't scale down the operation of that pen because it is a larger,
they could if they really wanted
pretty
to.
Girthy pen. They might just have needed to make
it. It's not that girthy.
It feels
for what it is. I think the pen's about as thin as
that's my point. My point. I don't know if they could make it thinner. Is my point. Like it looks, it's a bit like a telephone pole.
If they really wanted to, they could.
I really want them to. Does that count?
I mean. Maybe.
To Germany.
Well, I mean,
it's a fun method. But method with a mechanism, I guess.
That one's both.
I like it. I wish they could make them smaller. I don't know why all eyedropper / barrel filler whatever pens need to be gigantic.
Well, that's like the benefit is you get ink capacity.
But if you took a Pro Gear Slim and put a ton of ink in that, like that's still
still a lot of ink.
Enormous capacity.
Okay, what is the minimal, we're diverting here, but what is the smallest ink capacity for an eyedropper or barrel filling pen that you think would be like worth the hassle?
The E95S, the back end of that pen is tiny, but yet it's still,
I mean, that
like,
would hold like
yeah.
at least a milliliter.
Yeah.
Mill and a half, maybe.
And it's still way better than the Con 40. So, like, why not? So, to me, as long as it's like.
Can you eyedropper fill with them?
I mean, it's got metal threads.
Yeah, it does.
So.
But if you really wanted to, I mean.
According to you, if you really wanted to, you can do anything. But, no.
You got me thinking now. I don't know.
Anyway.
Okay.
Let's move on to question number two.
Okay. That sounds good. All right. What is... Cake is my cat? Is that what this is?
Yes.
Cake is my cat. I was like, cackle's my cat? Nope. Cake is my cat. That's an I. Okay. What are your favorite notebooks that you'd recommend while on the go and or traveling?
All right. This is an easy one because I am a stan for the Nemosyne 192. So this is a small book. Mm-hmm. But this can go in a front pocket. It can go in a back pocket. And I always keep
cargo pocket?
You could put an A5 in a cargo pocket.
You could
pocket.
Put a lot in a cargo pocket.
But I always keep it in the front end of my Rickshaw Sinclair here. I just take random notes on it. And I always keep it here because I need to know what pens I have inked up with what. I love it because all of Nemosyne's notebooks have a plastic cover, front and back, which means if you are just having it at the coffee shop or at a table and you do dribble something on it, a drink or whatever, you're not ruining anything. Nothing is absorbing any of your spritz, your spray, or your beverage because both sides are plastic. It's not just the front with the cardboard backing. Both sides are plastic. This thing is $3.
It's pretty cheap.
It is $3. 90-gram paper. It is beautiful. It is just as, if not as good, not is just as good, if not better than Rhodia. And the actual ruling is fun, too. So you've got lines. They don't go all the way to the sides. It's just a nice guide. And then it is segmented with bolder lines to separate it into three sections. So if you wanted to, with such a small little bit, you still can break up whatever you need to break up.
What's the spacing on those lines? They look tight.
I mean, it's a little tight.
Is it 5 millimeter?
I don't know.
It might be tighter than that.
I ain't measuring that.
But I'll say it's 3.5. That could be wrong.
There's 5 millimeter. It says it on the front here. Still haven't taken the sticker off.
There you go.
Yeah. So the main lines are kind of perforated, like tiny little dots, and then the big bold lines to segment, you know, kind of your sections are, you know, solid lines. It is micro perforated paper, top wire bound, like all that for $3.
That's a lot.
I am. I love this notebook. I love it. I will buy 1,000 of them. If they stop making it, I'm going to. You're not going to see me for a couple years. It'd be very sad. So a close second, though, is the 196. So that is a B6 size notebook, considerably larger than this, probably twice the size, if not more. Mm. But that is something that I would just kind of keep at my desk, keep in my bag. That one is just the same, you know, same sort of paper. Top wire bound is what I've found to be most helpful for me. It always lays flat. You can fold it over itself. You don't need to take up any extra space. With anything that just opens up, A, you have to really hunt to find something that truly lays flat if it's not wire bound. And if it's not wire bound, you have to now have twice as much space being taken up on your table, whether or not you're at a coffee shop or at your desk or, you know, at on top of a boat that's moving really fast. You can want to tuck that in, you know, less real estate. I like wire bound. And on top of that, it's got the same sort of ruling situation as the little guy here, but with the date and subject up at the top. So if you just wanted to like write what meeting you are taking notes for, I find that super helpful. So I'm a huge fan of those. I take this thing with me everywhere. There's also a smaller one. It's like the 195, I think. Not really like as practical unless you just got like really tiny pockets, which, you know, some pants are very, very stingy with the pockets.
The 195 size is the A5 size. So that's
okay. That's not it. So this is the 192. It might be 193. I remember it's a larger number, but it's a smaller book, which is always weird to me.
We're going
to
find this out right now.
But yeah, anyway, $3 for this.
That's the 192. The 192 is the smallest.
There's one more. Keep on going down. Seeing. It's out of stock. It's all the way at the bottom. There we go. That one.
The 193.
193. Yeah. So it's a higher number, but a smaller book.
So what is the dimensions on that one? That is
tiny.
We'll find out right now.
Anyway, Nemosyne 192. It's fantastic.
So it's 4 inches tall by 2.3 inches wide.
Yeah, it's like a little reporter jot book. It's fine. You know, this though can do the job and better. And again, $3. I can't get over it.
That one's got 5 millimeter ruling too.
Yeah.
Something had 3.5 millimeter ruling. I don't remember what it is. Maybe it wasn't even this brand.
I don't know. I don't really pay attention to ruling that much.
No?
No. I can work with whatever. I can work with whatever's there.
That's crazy.
There are a lot of things I just don't care about. Yeah. Ruling is one of them.
Okay.
I'll write on just about anything as long as it's not French ruled.
Well, that's because you use your friggin' extra fines.
I do.
The us broad people.
Well, you know what I do?
The medium and broad people.
I've got a medium here. What I do here is I actually just kind of like stretch my words a little bit more.
Oh, interesting.
So they're not all bunched up, and that I can kind of chill with.
You fit like one word across that skinny little notebook?
Yeah. This isn't that bad. No, you know.
You can fit a couple words.
Yeah,
in
a couple
there.
Words for sure.
What, 3.5 inches wide?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the size of an index card, basically, that whole notebook.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's about right.
I think that's a good comparison.
Yeah.
What about you? What are your go-to travel notebooks?
Well, mine is very appropriate because it is called the Traveler's Notebook.
That's right. You recently did travel with that notebook.
I've mentioned this like 80 times on the Pencast. But I have a couple that I've been carrying around. One of them is the regular size Traveler's. I had the Passport as well, but I don't find that much easier to carry around, especially because if I'm going to have this in a backpack or in like a pocket or something like that, I find that, you know, they're the same width. The passport size is the same width. It's just not as tall. And I'm like, I'd rather have the extra height because the width is going to be the same. So if I'm going to put it in a pocket, I don't mind having sticking out of my pocket for a couple inches and get more real estate. So that I use. I keep several different notebooks in there, Goulet notebooks that would tow my river paper. I like that. I keep different rulings. I keep a lined ruling and a dot ruling in there. And the dot ruling I use for work stuff. And the lined ruling I use for personal stuff. So, you know,
I like that.
Stuff like that. So if I'm like writing on family things or making notes about whatever, I can sort of chain contexts, but it's all in one notebook, which I like. So that's really handy. And then the other one I have is kind of a similar vibe. Oh, I don't even have it in my backpack. Whoops. I took it out of my desk and it's
Describe
still at
it
my
in
desk.
Detail.
It's the endless one. So it's basically the same idea, but it's A5 size. So that one, it's okay carrying around in a backpack. And I like the wider notebook. I like the more real estate, but I don't find that I'm like literally carrying it on my person as much.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'm going to carry my backpack, well then really I could use whatever size notebook I want. So I would have to say my go-to traveling notebook would be the actual traveler's notebook.
For sure. It definitely is. It's handy. Look at that. That medium's not that bad on the 5mm.
No, ruling. That's very doable.
Yeah.
That's very doable.
Cool. All right.
Sweet.
Well, there you go. Cake is my cat.
Love that handle. All right.
All right. Moving on. This is from Mellow Jello. With purchases of Pelican and Lamy to Asian pen makers, will German-made fountain pens be a thing of the past?
I mean, at some point, yes.
At some point, we're all a thing of the past.
Yes, humanity will be a thing of the past at some point. I don't believe so. I think it's still going pretty strong. Pelican actually didn't sell to an Asian company, so I think I have to clear that up. They did sell last year to Holdham SAS.
Holdham.
SAS. They're the holding group for Hamlin Group.
So it's a Holdham.
A French family-owned company.
Oh.
So it's a French company that actually bought Pelican. But Lamy did sell a month ago to Mitsubishi Pencil in Japan. So that is accurate. But either way, both sold to non-German companies, which I think is really more what the question is getting at. So as far as I know, for both of these companies, manufacturing will still continue as is in Germany, all the same employees, same factories for the foreseeable future. Now, that could always change because it's different ownership now and they can do whatever they want to do. But I can't imagine there's a lot of incentive to want to change it, especially because they're both really well-respected companies. I mean, you never know what's going on behind the scenes, and there's all kinds of like labor stuff and costs and all that that could always go into these types of decisions. But I don't believe that that is, you know, any rumblings or anything that I've even heard might happen with either of these. Now, I will say, you know, Lamy is primarily a writing instrument company. Like that is what they are known for. So the fact that they were bought by another writing instrument company, a lot more confidence there that things are not going to change fundamentally for Lamy anytime soon, if ever. Pelican, they actually, when I saw sold last year that the fine writing portion of Pelican is only 7% of their gross revenue. So,
and that includes all fountain pens.
That includes all fountain pens and rollerballs and everything else.
Oh.
So, yeah. So
rollerballs too.
Yeah. I mean, they make a lot of like art supplies and stuff like that too.
Oh.
I think the art supplies and things like that, you know, more of like the general office supplies category is what makes up the bulk of that company, which is why I think Hamlin Group bought them because that's what they do. So because their fine writing is not the majority portion of what they do, you know, anyone could speculate as to what the future could be. Again, I have no inside knowledge or even anticipation that anything would change there because they've been around for 100 years and have been doing their thing and they're really well respected.
Yeah,
so
and
it'd be crazy to change it.
But to be frank, since they were purchased, like behind the scenes here, we have not talked about Pelican's ownership at all. Like honestly, I forgot they were purchased because it has been 100% being real with y'all. Nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Like nothing behind the scenes has changed.
In fact, I could probably see them like, okay, it's only 7%, which is kind of like, oh, it's kind of insignificant. But it's also like,
let's ignore this.
That's not enough for them to bother changing right. anything. Because like, that's not even what's going to make up the bulk of any impactful stuff they would try to do with
no,
it.
No, it's like, oh man, we really got to nail, we got to save this 7%, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, just for perspective too, again, this is like some rough numbers here. But based on some of the articles I was reading, I don't know how big Pelican was when it sold. But I did read that with the acquisition of Pelican, that Hamlin Group is about a 600 million euro company. So that's pretty big. And then, Mitsubishi Pencil, they are a public company in Japan. So I don't know what they paid for Lamy, but I think they're around about a half a billion dollars. So around a $500 million. Or $500 million equivalent, you know, revenue company just on their own. So then you add Lamy on top of that, they're probably bigger overall than Hamlin Group. So, you know, it's kind of interesting.
You don't think they paid Lamy 2000?
Well done, sir. No, I don't know. I don't know how big Lamy is officially, but they got up at least, you know, 250, 300 million maybe, just rough guess. Because they're a pretty big brand. But again, I don't know because they've been a privately held company. And I don't know if because Mitsubishi Pencil is public that it will be made public what they actually paid for Lamy. I would assume so at some point, but that's not anything I've read so far. Not that it really matters to any of us, really. But I mean, I think, probably proportionally, both companies acquiring, you know, both Hamlin Group and Mitsubishi Pencil acquiring those two separate companies was not an insignificant investment for either of them. Because I don't know how big Pelican was either, but at least a couple hundred million dollars, I would imagine. So, you know, that's a pretty good investment. So I think they're, you know, it's not like they're just gobbling up some little thing and trying to fold it into the parent company.
They want
to
make money like, on their investment.
Yeah. And it's a very substantial, you know, acquisition, like a third or half of the current value of the company. Like that is a meaningful investment that would not just like, oh, it's going to get sucked into the parent company and, you know, they're going to fire everybody and just make them change the whole way they operate. That you see with like multi-billion dollar companies that are gobbling up a $50 million or $100 million company. Then it's like, well, how they were doing things doesn't matter because you're folding into the mothership now. It doesn't feel like that's either of these situations. But I don't know.
And you've been to the Lamy factory and you've seen how incredibly efficient it is.
I have, yeah.
Like it's hard to believe that they would want to shift around a bunch of things in a factory that literally sustains itself.
Yeah, and even just like, okay, so you got that whole operation. Even if you wanted to move manufacturing or whatever, like that's a huge investment and a huge disruption to do that. So it would have to be like really worth it.
They manufacture their own manufacturing.
Yeah. And I don't know that like, I mean, I would assume that they would move it to Japan because that's where they're based out of. But like, I don't know if it'd be more beneficial to do it in Japan than Germany. Probably not. I don't know.
I don't really know. I know that
we're wildly speculating here. We have no
The Japan economy is a little, you know, trying to get on its feet right now, but I have no idea what's going on with Germany.
I don't know. Germany's got their own problems like we all do, right? So I've heard no rumblings of any of this. I would not anticipate that anything would change, but you know, it's something to keep an eye on. They don't own their own destiny as much anymore. So that's sort of what happens when you sell. But as far as like German pen makers as a whole, you know, those are two big ones, but they're also not the only ones still. So just ones that I could think of. You have Diplomat, Kaweco, Waldman, Otto Hutt, Faber-Castell, Mont Blanc, Online, Schmidt, Porsche Design, and probably others that I'm not thinking of that are all still manufacturing in Germany. Not to mention Yovo, Bock, Schmidt, all making nibs. So that's a pretty big thing too. So I don't think that that's going away. I don't know.
I believe Schmidt makes pens too.
We've seen some Schmidt pens.
I don't know who made them.
They're Schmidt branded pens, but I don't know. True. Yeah, sometimes it's tough with like OEM and stuff like that. Yeah. Like some companies could make certain parts for other pen companies and stuff like that. But I think Schmidt's more of a nib maker.
Definitely.
And stuff like that and like converters and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of very established pen companies. And these are just fountain pen companies. There are other pen companies that don't do fountain pens like Rotring and other ones like that are more in like the rollerball or technical technical pens or pencils or whatever, that are other brands. Staedtler, that's another big one in Germany. So there's several other brands that are not doing fountain pens, but that maybe did at some point. But then, because you've seen that rotary and core, that thing was crazy. You know, so yeah, there's definitely still plenty of manufacturing going on in Germany. I don't think that that's that crazy. And honestly, like the way that globalization is going, like pretty much any country is going to have larger parent companies that are all over the world that are buying. And that's kind of just the way things go in general. So you can't really fight it so much, but I don't know. Hopefully it doesn't affect things in the fountain pen world too much, but we could always be surprised. I don't know. But we have no reason to believe that it's going to do anything crazy in the meantime. So
no, things have been good, smooth, yeah. Good, still good vendor communication from them to retailers. So definitely. Business as usual for now.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Question for you, Drew.
Yeah.
From Ply Pie. Which two inks would you mix together to create your signature ink? Answers are not limited to Konpeki and Buttered Popcorn.
My signature ink wouldn't be yellow.
You mix Konpeki and Buttered Popcorn, you would get like a green, right? You get some kind of like mid-range green.
Well, I think that...
So that's what I had to clarify is like, are we talking mixing properties or like literally mixing two inks together?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that at all.
You wouldn't be inclined to do that?
No, there are enough colors out there. Also, I have no idea what would happen.
Right.
Like, there's enough colors out there that...
That's part of the adventure, though, isn't it?
You're gonna if I decided to like take two colors I really like and mix them together, odds are whatever it resulted in, I'm gonna be able to find already available somewhere else. Like, there's so many colors out there.
Maybe.
No, I'm thinking like properties, probably.
Yeah, that's probably like what this combined. Question was okay. more asking.
That will be more fun because I
answered it both ways just to be sure.
Of course you did. Yes. first thing that pops into my mind is one of my favorite inks, my current favorite brown, which is Diamine Winter Spice. So that is a brown ink with a green sheen and a blue shimmer. I love the trifecta there. I'm not a big shimmer person. I like this ink though because there's not a ton of shimmer in there.
It's a gentle shimmer.
It is. But really, I could do without it. I'd kind of be curious to see like how, because I don't mind running out of shimmer. You know, when with that ink, the second half of my writing experience is just green and brown, and I really like that.
Interesting.
So honestly, just give me Diamine Winter Spice without the blue, so it's less wintry and just brown and green, and you can call it.
Is that the winter or is that the spice?
Good question. I'm gonna say that's the winter. The blue, that seems more winter.
Yeah.
And you can just call it spicy brown.
I think of spice as like, you know, flakes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's true. It could be blue spice, I guess.
A philosophical question.
But yeah, just green and brown, winter spice, but no winter, just spice brown spice. I've always wanted to see sheen in black ink. So what I suspect is happening is that you can't add more, since black is heavy on the dye.
Right.
You just might not be able to add enough to get sheen. Like if you try to add so much ink to an already dye intensive ink, more dye to an already dye intensive ink.
Yeah.
It might become cantankerous.
Well, I don't think, I mean, you look at like Noodler's inks are known for being like crazy saturated.
Yeah.
It's not just the saturation that makes it sheen. I think it has to do with the properties of specific dye colors, like specific dye components.
Yeah. Because some colors you never see. Some inks, right. Some colors you just never see sheen
and
with.
And most sheens that you see is like kind of a red sheen, often that comes out of kind of a dark blue ink.
Yeah.
I think that's because whatever the dye components involved there, and again, I don't know all the details of this, but like you tend to see similar types of sheen. Like you'll see really heavy green sheens on certain inks.
Yeah.
And then you'll see heavy red sheens on others. And then
I
maybe
would like
some gold
to see
sheens,
you know, a black like, with sheen.
A black with what color sheen would you want?
I don't care. Anything at this point. Beggars can't be choosers. But if I mean,
why couldn't you have like, I don't know, whatever, like, I don't know, if you took, let's say nitrogen, right? One of the heaviest sheening inks. Could you mix that into a really dark black ink? And would it maybe just not really make it bluer? Because the black would,
We could try, but maybe it won't counteract the sheen. Maybe the sheen will remain.
It might explode.
It might explode.
I don't know what would happen with nitrogen.
Yeah, but that would be cool. If you could do black with a nice red sheen like you see on some of those blue sheeners, then I think that would be super cool. So yeah. I wouldn't mind that. Honestly, my favorite would be like a black that had some sort of crazy hot pink sheen, but that we're not combining inks at that point because nothing has a hot pink sheen. So that's outside of this conversation.
You could do a hot pink shimmer.
Yeah, I don't want a shimmer. That's not my signature ink.
We're talking shimmer?
No, we're talking signature ink. I am not a shimmer guy. Okay. I'm subtle. I don't like drawing attention to myself. Wardrobe is very, very, very calm.
You don't like drawing attention to yourself?
No, super. No, don't even look at me, Brian.
Because everybody is just staring at the subtleties of the ink that you're using.
I only wear this to blend into the Pencast sign, Brian. I didn't even own a weird shirt until the Pencast began. No. Which is not true. Yeah. Okay. What I'm going to settle on is, I'm going back to brown. Not surprisingly, because you want my signature ink. It's got to be a brown. So we're going to go brown, but then I'm going to take that gold sheen that you can find on Lamy Azurite or dark lilac.
Okay.
That kind of like that, the one that you see with purple inks. You sometimes see it with Yamabuto a little bit, but you definitely see it with Azurite and dark lilac. I'm going to put that sheen, that goldy kind of mustardy sheen, onto a brown ink, and I feel like that would be fun. And it's nice earthy too. It's not like the sheen is out of place and weird.
Interesting.
So choice one would be brown with green sheen, which is essentially winter spice without the shimmer. And then second choice would be a brown. It could be any brown. I don't care. I still haven't found my perfect brown, but something, a nice rich brown with the gold sheen from those Lamy inks.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, Azurite's got like more of a green sheen to it, not gold.
It's that same. Yeah, I guess it's not gold. It's not really. It's not green though. Like it's that same sort of sheen that you see with dark lilac. So whatever they're putting in one, they're putting in the other.
I just went through all these for the dark lilac thing, and I think the Azurite, if my memory serves me correctly, is a more distinct green sheen, kind of like Frankenstein. It's more like that kind of a sheen, like a purple with a green, like a noticeably green to it.
I thought Frankenstein was more punchy because of its shimmer.
Yeah, so there's Azurite. That's like a pretty distinct green, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that picture definitely looks green.
Yeah, but either way, I mean.
Yeah, that though, whatever that is.
You would want that sheenness to happen on.
On a brown.
A brown. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Do you have more to say?
Nope.
Should I move on?
Those are my two.
I wanted to clarify if it was like literally mixing two inks together, because if so, I haven't done a lot of that.
No.
I think some of that is because we have access to like 800 plus inks, and I'm like,
there's enough out there.
There's plenty. So I haven't messed a whole lot. Plus I don't have a good sense of color personally. So mixing together, I usually mix things that are not that compatible.
There was someone last week who echoed my appeal for Diamine Silver Fox, but said that they use it as a base for a lot of their inks because it is a lighter gray.
Oh, interesting.
And they say they use Silver Fox.
Inks?
Yeah. They use Silver Fox and then they use that as a base and drop in a little bit of green to kind of like, pull it up a little bit.
Interesting.
Because it's a pretty subdued green. So I can see that being beneficial. Okay. Something like that to start with, something kind of, as a
kind of a neutral
blank
color.
Canvas. Yeah.
Yeah. I've literally never tried to do anything.
If
like
I
that.
Did, I would start with something like that. I wouldn't go mixing like a red with another saturated color. I would start with something pretty light.
Yeah. That would definitely get you better results, I would think. This is something I haven't experimented with as much. And we've carried like some ink mixing things in the past too. And they're usually not that popular.
And it's work.
You got to really like want to nerd out and like you're basically like picking up another hobby pretty much, like a sub hobby within this hobby. So it's not for everybody, but it can definitely get like
the few times
it can get deep and you can have fun with it.
Oh, you certainly can. The few times I've done it, I've found a color, wow, this is cool, and then I'm like, oh wait, this is kind of like that thing that I could have just bought.
Yeah, a little bit. But if you already have like a decent collection of inks and you're like, I don't need to buy more inks, I have so much ink, I will never use this in four lifetimes. Why not try mixing some? Because you might find some combination of something that you really like is cool. So for me, it was like, okay, if I literally were to mix it, I would take two colors that wouldn't be like too way far off from each other. So I picked Robert Oster Blue Water Ice, which is a go-to favorite of mine, and Diamine Marine. So kind of like a shady blue and a shady teal, turquoise teal, and mix those together and you'd end up with something in between, which would not be that different from either one of them, but I'm hoping would still shade really well. So that would be kind of interesting. So I don't know. Maybe I'll do that. Probably not, but maybe I will, but I might not. And then if we're just talking properties, not actually mixing two inks together, I thought Blue Water Ice, which is my go-to blue at the moment, but with some color range like a Sailor Manyo Neko Yanagi.
Ooh.
So how you like have that purple that like does all kinds of really interesting color shifting, having that, but in a blue base would be pretty rad.
Any dark color that did that would be super rad.
Yeah, because all the like color shifty ones, they're always so light. Like even Neko Yanagi, like I inked that up today in a pen and it was like, it's like, it's pretty, but it's like, you need to like dump the ink on there to like really get its full effect, which is why broads are better than extra fines anyway. But, you know, the particular pen I was using it in was like a fine and it was like, it just, I wanted it to be so much darker, but that's me. That's like every ink I use pretty much is like, I want it to be like really punchy and saturated.
Yeah.
That's kind of always been my inclination. And then I thought it'd be kind of cool to have like, so you know how you have like blue black inks, right?
Oh yeah.
Which is great. Well, I know for years we've had people ask like, what about a green black? And it's like, yeah, there's like some
Diamond has a
like
green black.
Really, really dark. Yeah. Which is basically like really, really dark green. But then people are like, what about like a purple black or a red black or whatever?
Those exist too.
Those are kind of a thing. And yeah. Like there are some red blacks, but most of them are like
Diamond does red black. Noodlers does red
Noodlers
black.
Noodlers has a red black, but it's kind of more like a maroon brown. It doesn't really look like a red black.
Sure.
So I might be asking for something that can't really be done here, but I would love to have something that has a noticeable red coloring to it, like a Diamine Red Dragon,
mm-hmm.
but a really deep black to it, like the Platinum Chaokuro. They're like super, super dark.
That is interesting because the more black you add to red, the more burgundy it becomes.
Right.
So you need it to stay red but get darker.
You would almost need it to like not quite mix all the way.
No, you want something like, you know, like an oxblood leather or something like that,
mm-hmm.
where it's black and red at the same time.
Yeah. Or like you said earlier, like a red black. Sheen, but on a super dark black.
Yeah.
That would be rad.
That would be really
nice. If I could extract the red sheen out of something like a nitrogen,
mm-hmm.
and put that into like a Chaokuro, that would be kicking. I'd be into that.
That would be awesome.
So yeah, that'd be pretty cool. So either, you know, mixes of blues that I always like and go to, or something crazy like a red black sheening red black whatever thing. That'd be kind of neat. So curious what y'all think too. Your dream inks that you want to dream up. All right.
All right.
That's it for that one.
I interrupted you a lot on that question. I'm sorry.
No.
I need to be better about that.
How dare you?
Final question this week is from Hank Hill himself.
Wow.
Never had any interesting fountain pens like those you have. I'm broke at the moment. I know pens aren't crazy amount of money, but to me they are. But in the future, I might get one for line art and drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth getting a cheap pen and ink to try out or saving up to go all in on a decent one? As sometimes getting the cheap stuff, like a cheap drawing tablet, can be worse than getting none.
Sure.
I'm left-handed. Is there any need to worry about that?
Ooh.
So a couple things, but I thought that was a really interesting thing about how sometimes getting the bad product can be worse than getting none.
Yeah.
And I've never really said that in my brain, but I think Hank Hill is totally right there, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I'll say we do a good amount of like curation in the products that we choose to carry. So we really don't carry any absolute crap.
I hope not.
But there are cheap pens out there that are absolute crap. So if you're asking just a general question like this, I will say if you're just like going on Amazon or going on to AliExpress or something and just buying something cheap, you might have a bad experience. So it is kind of difficult for me to say like, yeah, just buy something cheap because you don't want to invest a lot because it is a tool. And I can say not just in the fountain pen world, but also as an avid just tool user, fan, collector in general, you know, there's an expression, especially in the woodworking world, that says you buy once, cry once. So that is for those that advocate to spend more money, like basically buy the tool that you're going to have the rest of your life. Now, that makes more sense for something like a table saw if you're a woodworker, because like they're large and they're heavy and you're probably not going to be having a collection of them that you can like easily trade out.
And you don't want to have to throw them away.
Yeah. Pens are totally different than that. But I think that some of the principle still holds up. Now, for me personally, I did not approach this hobby with a buy once, cry once mentality, partly because I didn't even have that as an option because I had no money. But, you know, part of it too is like pens are so personal. You can buy a really expensive pen and it can be a really good pen, but it might not be the right pen for you or for what you're trying to do with it. Especially if you're new to the hobby and you don't really know what it is that you want or how to use it. And especially using it for art, because that's a whole different dynamic. And you're a lefty, which is a whole other dynamic. You're going to have a really hard time unless you, I don't know, can get your hands on a bunch of pens. Like you have other people that you know, or you go to shows, you know, that have pens and you can try out a bunch and you get like a really, really good feel for what you'd really want. Then maybe you could spend a lot and get something that would be really good and last you a long time. But my personal approach to this in your situation here, Hank, would be to start out on the less expensive end. You're probably going to have to go through a few pens to learn what you really like, you know, and you could either keep those or trade them out, you know, sell them off, give them away, whatever. You don't have to spend a ton. You know, you can spend 20, 30 bucks on pens that you can get some pretty decent pens that just wouldn't be as like fancy or whatever. But if you're using it for art, I think you can spend, you know, a reasonable amount and still really enjoy those. And for like any other type of like art pens and stuff like that, 20, 30 bucks to me is not that crazy because you can use like, you know, art grade, like, you know, felt tip pens and like other things like that, they can really add up, especially because a lot of those, you can't refill them. So they're disposable. So you'll go through $20, $30 worth of pens pretty quickly. So I do think fountain pens are actually a pretty decent investment for art. So that might be worth considering. And again, I don't do a lot of art, so I may not be like the best person to answer this, but you know, so I'm sort of saying two things. It's like, I do think going some of the cheap route would be the way to go, but not just any cheap pen. You're going to have to do some research, you know, do some pens. So I have a couple of recommendations for you that are not going to be, you know, maybe in some people's mind, they would be cheap pens. But you know, probably not as cheap as what you were probably thinking, because you can get some pens that are like a couple of bucks that, you know, are going to be more of a gamble. But I don't know, honestly, sometimes too, if you just like, you buy a cheap pen knowing it's cheap, and if it's not a great experience, and you're like, well, it's probably because it was cheap, and it may not ruin the experience for you. So for me, the Noodler's Ahab might be worth looking at. It's not a pen for everybody, but there's a lot of artists that are kind of into that pen because you can vary the line width with pressure. It holds a ton of ink in it. It's not a very fancy pen. It's very durable. So you don't really have to wear kid gloves, you know, when you're using it. And it has a really, really good flow rate. So it can really put down a lot of ink. So depending on what type of art that you're doing could be useful. So that's one maybe worth looking at. And then you're in like the, what, 20 some dollar range for that. If you want to go something a little more conventional, the Twisby Eco, I think, would be a great pen to consider. You know, you would have to decide what nib width you would want to go with. It depends on how you like to do your artwork, but probably something in the extra fine to fine range would be more versatile. I think that would be good. Eco's nice because you get a really good experience. They're well-made pens, not a huge investment. You're looking $33 basically. I don't know for drawing if there's a lot that you're going to have to take into consideration as a lefty. Because I tend to associate, if you're drawing, you're moving the paper around, you're changing it. You're not really writing in any particular, you're not really drawing in any particular way that like makes the tool as important. It's more for if you're trying to write from left to right as a lefty, that's much more impactful than when you're drawing, I would imagine. But again, I'm not a left-handed artist, so I really don't know, but I've never heard that come up.
You're working, like, I imagine, with fewer constraints.
When you're drawing, yeah. Because you just like, you're not trying to follow a prescriptive path necessarily. Yeah. So it's just less impactful.
I imagine.
Yeah. So I would say for writing, the Ahab would be a little more frustrating because of that flex nib. It's not as easy to use that as a lefty. Then you would probably want to go more of a a non-flex nib route like the Eco. But for drawing, I think it wouldn't maybe make a whole lot of difference. And then I will say for writing, you know, for lefties, we have a couple of videos on our channel about writing left-handed. And basically it depends on where your hand position is in relation to the line. If you're an underhanded writer, then you don't have to take a lot of considerations at all. If you're a side writer where your hand is going over across your writing, or you write kind of hook-handed where it's above, then you get into more smearing and stuff. That's where you have to take a little more into consideration. So it all does also depend on the particular style of writing as a lefty that you are. But we have other videos that we can, you know, you can either search on our channel or maybe we'll link to it or whatever, but there's more that you could learn about if you want to do that. But there's a lot of other good pens. I just wanted to mention a couple. Did any come to mind for you?
Yeah, I'm going to go the Japanese route because you kind of didn't go down that hole. I would say that both the Platinum Preppy and the Pilot Kakuno can provide you with extra fine lines, which as an artist, you might find beneficial. So those are a like $7, $8 pen and a $14 pen. So very affordable. To me, that nib fineness, if you are doing line art, is something that you're going to need at least one of these two in your affordable pen arsenal, because you got to have those for like, you know, cross hatching and stuff like that.
That's true. And those are so affordable. You could even get different nib sizes with that and keep them inked up with different colors or whatever, you know. That's a good way to go. I was thinking the Preppy initially too. That's a good choice.
For sure. And they're super reliable. They both cap well. They both write reliably. So you can't really go wrong with either of those. So no, apart from those two, I think that you hit the nail on the head. But I would throw in a couple of those lower cost Japanese pens too to round out the collection.
Yeah. And honestly, if you just search on our site for, you know, go to like shop all fountain pens and you sort by popularity, and then you just look at the price that seems fitting to you, that's not a bad way to go.
No.
You know, because those are going to be popular for a reason. Cool.
Yes, indeed.
Well, if you have more questions for us for future episodes, you can definitely leave comments down on YouTube. You can email us at pencast@gouletpens.com. Keep those questions coming and we'll keep those answers coming back at you. But for the next segment here, we're going to do the pen spotlight, but we're going to be spotlighting a bunch of pens because we had, well, we'll do that. Let's say do the intro segment and then we'll talk. Okay.
So this was a question.
This was prompted.
That came in.
This was a fan prompted question
from Ariana.
Yes.
Ariana XOXOXO asks, "How many Lamy 2000s does Brian own?" And I thought to myself, "Well, he could answer that, sure, or he could show
us."
Show it.
Yeah. Never want to shy away from talking about a Lamy 2000.
Yes, we know that. So Brian has brought his army of Lamy 2000s. I was not expecting this.
Army.
I was expecting fewer, but we're going to get into it. And you're going to see what I see.
Yes.
All right. Look at that. My goodness.
Yes.
How many are we looking at here, Brian?
Good question. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14.
14 Lamy 2Ks.
And I technically own another one, but I lost it and I have never found it yet. I temporarily misplaced it.
Oh,
maybe 8 years ago.
I remember. Yes,
there was a fine nib, Lamy 2000, that's somewhere out there in the world that I'm still claiming I own. So 15, if you count it that way. So I thought I would just show. I'm not collecting them just for the sake of having a bunch of them. I will explain why I have so many.
Well, we've already discussed that while on the surface you might seem an insane collector, you actually are pretty practical collector.
There is a method to my madness, but it is
just like
madness.
With your hammers, how you surprise me with
exactly
how many hammer reasons you have.
Exactly. So if you notice this one,
why is it so shiny?
It looks shiny because this is my daily carry.
Yes.
Or it has been for a while. So this one's actually an extra fine because I've been using this with my Travelers that has the dot grid 5mm. And I just find it to be, you know, easier to use a really fine nib on that.
Is this your oldest?
You know, I have no idea which of these I acquired at which points necessarily. I do keep a spreadsheet with all my pens.
What
so
about
I
your
might
most
be able to
well
tell.
Used?
This one right here is my currently most well used pen.
Gotcha.
So this one, and I had to write extra fine on there because that is the thing, is on the Lamy 2000, it does have the nib size on the nib but you have to take it out of the grip section to be able to see it. So I just used a little pencil and just wrote in the nib size there for quick reference. This is the pencil.
Oh, yeah.
I went for the 7 because I think there's also a 5, if I'm not mistaken. 0.5 millimeter and 0.7. So, yep, it's a pencil. It's, you know, it's a pretty good deal, actually, for the price. But it's a pencil. So if I'm going to use a pencil, why not use that one? This is another Black Lamy 2000. I'm going to just explain them. The reason I have so many is because I have different nib sizes.
Right.
So we went through a period, this was probably 8 years ago, maybe, where we special ordered some interesting nibs on the Lamy 2000. So this one here, I wrote R. Why did I write R? What does the R mean?
Rachel?
Oh, rollerball. Sorry. Oh. This is rollerball.
Ah.
Which actually the rollerball one has a little dot indentation in the top. So it is a little easier to reference, you know, which one is the rollerball. Because I actually do carry both of those around in my backpack because sometimes you want a rollerball. This other one that I have that looks almost identical. This one is an oblique double broad.
Mm.
So if you look at it, it's just, I don't know how much detail you can see there. And I asked Drew, I was like, should I like ink up and write with all these? And he was like, no, I don't think you need to do all that because I would have to then clean out like 14 bends. So I'm not going to do that. But anyway, use your imagination. So this is not a regularly offered nib size. I don't even know if it's anything we can special order because if I remember correctly, when we special ordered these before, it took like 8 months to get them. So we're not going to do that. But anyway, I, with my infinite wisdom, was like, well, while we're special ordering all these, I'm going to keep one of each. That way we have them for reference. I think we have them in the nib nook, though, if you want to see what looks like. So this I wrote an A because it is an Architect grind, which is not a Lamy grind. This was a custom grind from one Mark
Bacass.
So I love that. And it's kind of like a blade. It's maybe it's more of his blade grind.
He does that.
But essentially it's an Architect. So it's like if you were to write with stub, but you turned it 90 degrees. That's the effect that you get with an Architect. So I do like that. This next one I have here is a double broad.
Ooh.
So if you just want a big old chunk.
Oh my God.
Of
looks like
tipping,
a 1.1.
It looks like a stub, doesn't it?
Turn it to the side. Let me see how like but thick the tipping is.
The
Jeez.
Tipping is very thick on the bottom. Golly. So yeah, it's very, very smooth writing. But it's like a fire hose. But that is cool. I like it. This one I've got is medium. It's plain old medium. Which I do like this too.
Oh, it's super smooth.
Medium is great. Then I've got, what is this? Oblique medium. So the oblique, it's kind of like a slanted at like a 25 degrees, something like that. Personally, I don't find obliques to really make that much of a difference with the way I write. Some people swear by them and think it makes a big difference. There's an oblique broad. So a similar slanty idea. And these are all what we call left foot obliques. So they're all like slanting kind of down that way,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to slanting the other way, which you would want if you were left-handed. So that's that. I'll move it along here. This is just a broad, plain old broad, which is still pretty chunkerific, you know? So also a little squarish looking there, but you know, it's nice and round on the bottom. So it maybe has a hint of stubbiness when it writes, but it's pretty rounded.
Oh, we're and getting to the crazy ones now.
These are the limited editions, right? So this is the blue one that they did. I don't remember what year. Probably could have looked that up. But it's a navy. They only did how many of them? It's got the number on here. 1919.
They also called this the Bauhaus.
Yes. There you go.
So
it's literally just a blue.
Yeah.
Lamy 2000. But it does have like a different... It's like, I think it's like a platinum coated clip or something. Oh, so it's like a shinier
very
than normal.
Shiny.
Yeah. So whereas you can see the regular clip is like the brushed stainless.
But it's not a blue clip though.
It's not a blue clip, but it's like mirror polished.
But this brown one does have kind of a brownish clip.
It does. It does. So I don't know what they did to make that happen. But yeah, this was another limited edition one. They did... How many of this one? 3,300 of these ones.
Did this have a particular name to it, like the Bauhaus?
That's a good question.
I don't remember.
I don't remember if it did either, but there you go.
Can you hold that up next to a black one so I can see kind of, because it looks kind of black. Okay, there you go. Yeah, now you can tell
now
the difference.
Now you can see by comparison.
Yeah.
And again, it's got the mirrored finish to it as well. But yeah. Yeah, it's probably the phone is probably like color correcting and adjusting.
No, it looks like it when you have the black next to it.
Yeah, by comparison there. And then this was the Black Amber. So this was a metal pen, so sort of like the Stainless 2000. It also has the mirror, you know, kind of finish on the clip. And it's no ink window or anything. But this is I don't remember what the finish is exactly. Excuse me, exactly. But
it's darker than the stainless steel.
It is, which is the last one that I had to show here. So that's the stainless steel. It's kind of schmutzy because I had put tape on it for some reason. And then, you know, but that also has the mirrored clip. So I guess that's just like what they do for the stainless one. And they just have variants of that for the limited editions.
You know what, that so,
the Black Amber they did.
The Black Amber kind of reminds me of the Palladium Studio.
It does, yeah. It's got that kind of like matte mm-hmm. kind of finish to it. I was wondering, like, is it Palladium? But it's darker than a Palladium. The Palladium is more like this kind of silvery color.
But with that same texture.
But with this exact kind of like, yeah, that soft look. So yeah, that is that one.
What's your favorite of all of the, you know, steel and colored ones? Like the ones outside of the standard black polycarbonate?
I mean, the dark blue one is pretty rad.
Yeah.
But the brown one is very unique.
It really is.
I really like, and I like that the clip is kind of different too.
That's
the only,
really cool.
The only thing on that one though is like the grip being stainless doesn't quite match it as mm-hmm. well. So for that reason, the overall look, I mean, this will be a shocker, but I really kind of like the blue one.
Yeah, no.
But honestly, the one that I grabbed the most is the old classic black. I
just for sure.
am into that. I like that. I don't ink up my weird nibs that often. So I'm not actually rotating and using all of these all too often, but I do like having access to them and being able to show them in videos like this.
So if they did another color, what color do you think they should do?
I think they should do a demonstrator. That would be amazing. But I doubt that'll ever happen.
What about a green, like a forest green? Kind of like
that would be like the next color, I would think. A dark green or a dark purple would be amazing. But that would be like crazy times. Like I can't imagine them ever doing a dark purple. But boy, would that look rad.
A dark lilac 2000?
Right?
Oh, man.
I mean, come on. Come on.
That would be amazing.
With ruthenium trim, like a gunmetal trim.
Oh.
How cool.
What if they did
that
instead of stainless steel grip?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. But really, if they did a demonstrator 2000, I would crap my pants. Like, that would be incredible. Because I want to see what's going on in there.
And you know they can do it. Like, clear polycarbonate is a thing.
100%. I mean, polycarbonate is normally clear. Like, it's plexiglass. That's what it is. That's the trade name or whatever. But I wouldn't want a brushed finish if they did that. I would want it to be like highly polished so you could like really see through there.
Yeah.
That would be my stipulation, you know, because it's totally within my control. Yeah. But anyway.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing those with us.
Yeah.
It's always fun having Brian show off some of his collection. And you do have more than I thought you did.
I have more than I thought I did too when I looked at them all in one place. Because sometimes I have these like in my backpack. I have, you know,
I
have some around.
I am a little curious. Why did you put tape on your stainless steel 2000?
Why did I put tape on there?
Was it to label it?
I'm trying to remember. It was to label it. Okay. Yeah. Because on this one, like I couldn't, but I don't know. I only have one. So it's like, I don't remember why I did that. I'm pretty sure it was to label the nib size.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's blue gone.
Yeah. I mean, that tape schmutz has probably been on there for 5 years. So I need to figure out.
That's okay. So that must not have been the one I used for the Frankenpin video then. I must have pulled one off the shelf.
Yeah, maybe you did.
Okay.
There was a period of time where I couldn't find my stainless steel 2000. There was like a 6 month period there where I could not find it.
I remember that.
And then I think it was like in a pen case of pens that
I'd it was like at aside. The house during COVID or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And it was like, I had a pen case set aside of pens that I needed to clean out. And it was just in there. And I looked through it and just, I overlooked it and Go figure.
I remember, yeah, we were worried it must have gotten, like, you know, moved off the desk into the trash or something.
I thought
you were
looking
for that for a while.
Yeah, it's because I was doing a video on the Lamy 2000 with all the nibs and stuff like that, and I could have sworn that I grabbed it out of my pen tray.
That's right.
And set it aside for that video. But no, it was at home the entire time. I just hallucinated that I saw it at the office.
It happens to the best of us.
Go figure.
Yeah.
It's what happens when you have too many pens. But I like having these problems.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's it for the 2000. Let's do the nonsense portion of things. Turkey hammock time.
Let's find out what's happening.
I'll tell you what's happening. Brian's getting warm right now.
Yeah.
Because it was like cold this morning.
These days have been weird.
And now I'm warm.
Yeah, I'm like sending my kid to school with like his heavy coat.
Yeah.
And then I'm leaving work and be like, oh my God.
You're like, I need short sleeves and shorts. Yeah.
It's wild.
Crazy.
Virginia. Anyway.
What's going on with you?
I had a pretty solid weekend. Yeah. So, Friday night we had our friends Michael and Brittany come over and we just had pizza and their two daughters and Archer just ran around the house crazily. And
doing kid things.
Yeah, doing kid things. They had a good old time. But we just sat and talked. You know, it's a nice opportunity for us to just have conversations while the kids entertain themselves. So that was pleasant. They're great friends. Known them for a long time. And so that was nice. And only a few arguments were had. Kids running from other kids saying that they're not letting them participate in things, or like they're running from me and I don't know why, while the other one's saying she's actually trying to kill me. And so, you know,
sounds like good things.
Good times.
Yeah. Yep.
So that was Friday. And then the next morning we were thinking about going up to Williamsburg and going to the American Revolution Museum, but it was really rainy and nasty Saturday morning. And so we went to Silver Diner for some late breakfast, thinking we were going to get on the road, maybe, just depending on how we felt.
Mm-hmm.
We had breakfast. It was nice. The coffee was good. The pancakes were bad. Overall, though, good breakfast experience. And then it was still raining, and we're like, no, let's just go home. We can do some other stuff. So we did, and of course, the rain stopped, and we kind of regretted it, but it's fine.
It was calling for a lot of rain, and then it just
didn't really happen. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I did get an opportunity to kind of chill out and watch a movie on my own. And while I have been on a physical media acquisition kick, you know, just buying some 4K Blu-rays and stuff like that, I actually went with one that I already owned on Blu-ray, but not 4K. Watched Christopher Nolan's The Prestige.
Oh.
You've seen that one?
I've seen it.
So good.
I've only seen it once.
So good.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's got a...
It has a twist ending.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing about that is, like, no matter how many times you see it, regardless of whether or not you know what's going to happen at the end, the reveal makes you pay attention to different things throughout the movie on your repeat viewings.
Gotcha. Okay.
And, you know, there's
so it's like a high rewatchability factor.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I'm still picking up things and finding out, like, oh, they did that on purpose. And it's so rewatchable, and I really, really love it. Like, Inception was a good Nolan film with a constant reveal, like, oh, actually, this is what it is. Oh, it's actually another layer. You know?
I had to watch it like four times just to understand what even happened.
But then once you get it and you rewatch it, like, the whole, like, city being folded in half, like, Marvel's done that like a couple times since then. So it's less of a
It was novel at the time.
It was. Yeah. It was. But that rewatching that, it has less of an impact. So I still put like Interstellar and Prestige in my like top two.
I haven't seen Interstellar. I need to.
That's another one that I can just keep on watching.
Yeah.
You know, because you get enough of it the first time, but it's still a lot to take in.
Is that the one with Matt Damon?
He's in there.
Is that Matthew McConaughey? They're both in there?
You might be thinking of The Martian.
The Martian.
That is with Matt Damon specifically.
That's Matt Damon. Okay.
But Matt Damon is in Interstellar.
Okay.
Is a smaller role. But
that's why I'm getting him confused.
Matthew McConaughey is the main character.
He's the main guy. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Both of those have high rewatchability. So I got to enjoy The Prestige, which I hadn't seen in a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely enjoyed it. It was just a great, you know, rainy day chill out movie.
You remember the movie Contact?
Of course. I watched that recently too.
That was one of the first movies that we ever had as a family on a DVD.
Oh, really?
Like when my parents bought their first DVD player. I think I've talked about this before, how they bought like Under Siege.
And yes, just
like
you
a
mentioned
couple of
Under
really
Siege.
Crappy movies.
Yeah.
So my dad bought like a couple of really crappy random movies, but then he also bought like Amadeus and Contact and some
Best
other
picture,
ones that are like really hold up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a mixed bag, but I remember Contact.
I saw Contact when I was young, didn't really care for it. Mm. Then I found out that it was based off a book, a fiction book that Carl Sagan wrote, and gave it another chance. And I'm like, oh my God, I am in love with this movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic and it super holds up. And the do you remember Jodie Foster's kind of like mentor boss at the beginning, who was blind or, you know, couldn't see very well? William Fichtner is his name. And he is kind of a second sort of like, you know, B-list actor that's never really number one, but I've committed his name to memory because I've seen him so many. He's one of those guys.
I recognize him for sure.
Everybody recognizes him, but there have been a couple people who I see enough and I'm like, you know what? I see you enough and I don't know your name. I'm going to know your name, sir, because you're in enough stuff that I respect you. I appreciate when you show up. So yeah, William Fichtner. Another guy I have committed to memory, even though he's a B-lister, is Steve Tobolowsky. And because every time he shows up, I'm like, oh, that guy. I'm like, it's disrespectful for me to just be continuously calling you that guy. But I'm like, no, Steve Tobolowsky. Like,
I recognize him.
Exactly. So
I've seen him from a lot of like comedies, I feel like.
Yeah, well, he was also in Community during the Who's the Boss episode.
Community. Yeah. Okay.
But if I see a B-list actor that shows up enough, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna remember you. I feel like it's respectful. But anyway, Prestige was great. Archer bought a Wii game. So Wii, God, I always call the Switch the Wii. I don't know why. We never even owned a Wii.
It's been like 7 years.
We never owned one. And yet that just comes out of my mouth. Archer bought a Switch game. I think it's for other platforms too, called like Overcooked or Overbaked. I don't know. It's like it's a multiplayer cooking game.
Okay.
Where like you're multiple people in the kitchen and like you're just running around like crazy, like trying
short
to like
order cook in this video game.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like, you know, like, and I heard him playing it with Michael and Brittany's kids, and then he and Shannon were playing it because Shannon loves these cooking games, usually on her phone, but they just seemed to be having a blast. And I'm sitting here trying to put together this Lego thing that's been plaguing me. I told you a while ago that my Ecto-1 got dropped and destroyed.
Oh, yeah. You talked about this.
And I've been trying to, like, I finally started putting it back together because I've got some Gundam I want to put together.
Okay.
But I'm waiting because I need to get my bookshelf all cleaned off because it's covered in like 100 little Dixie cups full of little pieces. So I'm working on that. And I hear them just laughing their butts off. And then they invite me to come play. So all three of us were playing this cooking game. And I'm trying to chop things and Archer's like, you need to boil the pasta. And Shane's like, I have pasta. Why is it on the floor? Don't throw it at me. And it's just like, it was so much fun. And I don't think that we've ever, the three of us, played a video game together.
Really?
No. Because I don't buy multiplayer games and like, you know, mobile games are what Shannon does. And
yeah.
So,
like the age of Archer too, it's like, you know, like Mario Party or something or Mario Kart, that would be a decent, you know.
Yeah,
family game to
that's
play.
A little too competitive, though.
Really?
Like, yeah, Archer doesn't like competition.
No,
okay. He doesn't like to lose, and so he just won't do it. So the thrill of winning is not enough to risk the chance of losing.
Oh wow,
for him,
fair enough.
It far outweighs the thrill of winning.
Even Mario Party, because it's like you're not really winning.
I've never played a Mario Party game.
Really?
No.
They're fun.
Yeah. Honestly, the Nintendo gaming systems haven't been like the main feature in my household since the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
But anyway, it was a lot of fun and it was like a teamwork sort of thing. A lot of communication. Like, okay, from now on, you move down below the island, you know, where the stoves are. I will always move over the top of the island so that we don't run into each other.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of like good teamwork, communication, and stuff like that. So it was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So that Saturday was pretty lazy. The next day, my plan was to meet my brothers at Ghostbusters to see the new Ghostbuster movie.
Oh, yeah.
So I woke up. I told them I'd like to have breakfast because this was kind of like a late birthday thing. Mm-hmm. I told them I wanted to have breakfast at Joe's in Southside.
Okay.
Because we were going out to Cine Bistro. That's over the river anyway.
Nice.
And so I got there. My brother Chad got there. Zach sends us a picture of an exploded tire. So he's not going to make it to breakfast.
Oh.
So, but I got to sit down with Chad and have just a good one-on-one conversation with him, which is not something that happens every day. So that was really, really delightful.
Nice.
We keep getting updates from Zach as this is happening and things aren't going well. He bent his jack.
Oh, gosh.
So he needed to wait for roadside assistance. And then he got his spare on after roadside assistance came and helped him. The spare was flat. So he ended up not being able to make it to the theater either, unfortunately.
Oh my gosh.
So
oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Come to think of it, I paid for both their tickets too. And yeah. Anyway, but either way, Chad and I got there early. We just continued to chat. We sat down at the movie, and I saw that they had these Slimer popcorn buckets available at the theater, which I didn't think this theater participated in that because I never saw the Dune bucket there, the famous Dune sandworm bucket.
Okay.
So I was thrilled that they were offering them. Didn't even ask how much it was.
Is this like a reusable bucket?
Oh, yeah. It looks like Slimer with a big old open mouth you fill with popcorn.
Oh, my gosh.
It's glorious.
I need to look this thing up.
Yeah, just Slimer popcorn bucket. Apparently, there was a controversy because the company released a picture of the bucket that didn't actually go to market, and the one that showed up was actually different. But I don't know. I just saw the one in the theater, and I was super happy about it.
Scandalous.
Yeah, that's the one. That first one there. It makes me so happy. So
wow.
It ended up being $30 in addition to the price of the popcorn. Wow. But I was like, I don't care. And here I am sitting at the sitting in my seat. You know, it's in a bistro, so I have my little table there.
On eBay, it's $55.
There you go.
So
what a deal.
You should sell it. You can make money.
No. So it's sitting right there looking at me with that big open mouth, just smiling. And I just
how big is this thing? Like
it's off the table. It's probably about
substantial.
Probably about that big. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm sitting here like we're about to watch a movie and I'm just like nudging Chad and be like, hey. Look, and it's just like, and he's like, yes, I know, Drew. Yes, you got it. I'm like,
I got my bucket.
I was so giddy. And it just got me thinking about, here I am, 40 years old, watching a Ghostbusters movie, paying $30 for a daggone popcorn bucket shaped like Slimer. And all I could think about was me on my big wheel, my Ghostbusters big wheel with a Slimer right up front with his two arms sticking out. And it wasn't a big wheel, it was a different brand, but still, it was big wheel-esque. And man, the journey was so amazing. And you know, I thought about my dad, and he was at 40, he was very serious and definitely not enjoying anything that he enjoyed when he was a child. And I'm like, well, things are different. Like, that's not me. And I see the part
nostalgia is a lot cooler now than it was.
It certainly was. And I just think about, like, what if I could tell him when I was, you know, that young and he was 40 that, like, hey, guess what? I'm going to be doing at 40. He would be like, that's not possible. You're going to be a grown man. You're going to be watching sports and working on cars. Like, nope. Slimer.
Slimer bucket.
You want to know how much it was, Dad? So that was delightful. That was really, really wonderful. The movie was great, too. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, and it's played the main girl in these newer movies. She's 17 now. She started when she was 12, when Ivan Reitman and Jason Reitman casted her. She was 12 years old. Even at 12, she had pictures of her as a little girl with like a Slimer toy and a Ghostbusters t-shirt. So like she, in her short amount of life, has been a lifelong fan. And like you can tell that she's enjoying her role. Like Paul That's Rudd awesome. Was hilarious, of course. Everybody was just doing their stuff. So
awesome.
It was awesome to see. Great day. Went over to Josh and Jeffrey's as usual. Had dinner with all them. They had a cake ready for me. Our friend Eddie had just placed jelly beans on it in the shape of my name.
Nice.
So that was given a coffee mug and some coffee by my friends Justin and Steven. So, yeah, great weekend. A lot of smiles. Got to do pretty much everything I wanted. Didn't have to go to the grocery store.
Nice.
Or didn't have to go to Costco. Shannon went to Costco. So bless her for that on a Saturday.
Wow.
I dodged that bullet.
Must really want to go to Costco.
Yeah, well.
I'm not a Costco member or anything, but we're not really near one. So
no,
it would be
it's really handy for that's where I get my coffee. Because it's like $12.99 for two pounds of coffee.
That's really good. Yeah.
Wow, and the Costco has good coffee. Is this like get the French roast every time?
Yeah.
Toilet paper, paper towels, chicken breasts, dishwasher pods, that stuff.
All that random crap.
Yeah.
You don't really care where you get it.
Nah. She always comes home with something random, though. This time she came home with some pork bowl, which, buns, like steamed buns.
Oh, yeah.
Which we don't have like a Japanese-style steamer and like a bamboo one. It's just kind of like, I just have like that metal steamer basket that kind of like unfolds like a flour,
put green beans in or whatever. Yeah.
So like I did that, it worked. I mean, steam, right?
Yeah.
So you just can't let it touch water, but other than that,
yeah.
But yeah, they came out okay.
I'm not a big fan of steamed vegetables.
personally. I love steamed vegetables. As long as you don't leave them in there too long.
Yeah. I don't know. I like roasted way better.
Roasted is good. Those can get soggy too, though.
Really?
Yeah. If like for squash and zucchini.
I guess it depends what it is.
Yeah. There's a right way to do it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
That's it for me.
Cool. Let's see here. What have I been up to? Been doing a lot of yard work because now that it's not winter, I guess. Yeah. Technically, it's not winter anymore.
No, spring. My birthday.
But like, yeah, that's right. A couple of weeks ago, though, it started to get warm, and it was like, as soon as it started to get warm, I was like, this grass is looking long already. And it's like, yeah, okay. Yep. Now it's mowing season again. So that's happening. It's very interesting, though. We've had a lot of rain, so much so that we get some like standing water in our yard. And I saw something I'd never seen before. We had a crayfish hole in the middle of our yard.
Really?
So you get like, the mud stacks.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. In the middle of our yard.
Wow.
And I was like, that's crazy. I've never seen it. I've left it there. I didn't have the heart to mow it over.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like, I don't know, poor little crayfish.
Oh, yeah. We used to have those. We used to see those all the time at the river behind my grandmother's house.
Yeah. And I've got a ton of them like near our creek because that makes sense because there's water there. Yeah. I'll see if I can like find a picture to show everybody on the podcast.
That must be kind of like, was it? So did you cut your grass, like your whole backyard?
I cut the grass.
And you didn't run into any like standing water that you couldn't see?
Well, the standing water will stay around for like a day or two after it rains, but then it'll like absorb or whatever. Okay. So it wasn't like anything that was prohibitive.
Good.
I just have to be conscious of it. Yep, there it is.
Look at that.
Little crayfish.
Wow, you did a good job dodging that.
Yeah.
Did you like actually weed whack around there?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. That was a couple of weeks ago and the grass is longer now.
Ah. Yeah, mine's getting longer too. I called the long guy, be like, all right, it's time.
Let's make it happen.
Come on back.
Kick it into gear.
Yeah, I was like, can you please come on payday? Yeah. Friday would be great.
There you go.
Because once it gets on a schedule, it's so easy. Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, I just PayPal him. So it's just like, you know, get paid, Venmo.
Nice.
One year it wasn't on that schedule. And I just forgot too many times.
Yeah, that happens. So Joseph is my lawn guy now. And he's excited about it because he wants to buy stuff.
That's right.
So it's like I kind of like that he wants to help. But I kind of enjoy doing the yard work too. But there's also plenty else to do. So I'm like, okay.
You have plenty of tractor activities.
I definitely have a lot of. Well, we'll talk about it because I'm going to talk about all the projects I'm doing right now. I'm gonna have him start mowing again, but I'm not gonna have him do like the aerating and the seeding and fertilizing, all that type of stuff. So I have a pretty decent sized yard. I have something called a lawn roller. It's essentially a giant rolling pin that you pull behind a lawnmower.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that last year.
Yeah, it's like a giant metal tube that I fill with water, and I just roll it across the yard because we have so many voles and, you know, things that are just tearing up the yard all the time. So I find it to be tremendously helpful while the grass is still kind of like wet, not soggy wet, but like moist. I roll the yard. That way it kind of smooths everything out. And then I aerate it because after I've compacted everything down, I aerate it so that I kind of let it breathe a little bit. And then I've never fertilized my yard ever. I've done lime before, but I've never fertilized. And I've tried to like, you know, you can learn anything on YouTube these days. I've tried to learn about grass stuff on YouTube, but it's like you either find videos of people that are like just cutting grass, which is honestly okay content to watch just as brainless. You know, it's kind of like watching somebody like power washing or something. It's like, it's just satisfying to like see the change that happens when there's like a really crazy tall grass and people are like cutting it like sped up and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff on Instagram about that. Yeah. Like a guy who will just like volunteer to cut this tremendously overgrown yard.
I get a lot of that in my algorithm.
Yeah.
Probably because of everything else I follow. But so you either get that type of stuff or you get people that are like so deep on the yard stuff. And it's like deep into the science and all these chemicals and all these other things. And they're not often like in our area. And it's like very like weather dependent and type of soil you have and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I need something like in between. I want to like have somewhat slightly better grass, but I do not want to be like a grass person.
Yeah, you've for years been satisfied with country grass, as you've called it.
Yeah, if it's green and covers the dirt.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's mostly green and mostly covers the dirt. But there's definitely points where that's not happening. And I've got, like, spots of my yard near the trees where it's like grass doesn't really grow there, but moss grows on it and stuff like that. And I'm like, why is that happening? And I always thought it was because like the soil pH was too low or something, because, you know, pine and oaks and stuff are very acidic. No, I checked the pH. pH is fine.
Yeah,
I think it's the nutrients.
I looked into a little bit of that for my grass, because I think that I thought that pine was like really, really negative for soil too.
That's what I thought.
Not that big of a deal.
See, with mine, like, I have really big pine trees right at the edge of my yard.
Same.
And like the grass is like not able to grow there.
Same.
And so I always thought like, oh, it must be this. No, I think it's just because the trees are just sucking up all the nutrients.
Maybe that's it.
You know?
And I always thought it was like, is it the shade because they're evergreens? Maybe just they don't get enough sunlight back there.
Yeah, maybe. But I've got some spots where like it gets plenty of sun.
Yeah. My backyard is like, you know, there's grass, and then just dead.
Yeah.
So like it's like the last third of my lawn is just nothing but. And that's where all the you know, trees are. But not all of them are pine trees, though.
Yeah.
So
I think it's just because they're sucking up all the nutrients out of the soil. So that's where that's the new thing I'm trying is putting down some fertilizer. But it's just like I really have to decide how much I care about all these things, because it's then you can get into fertilizer and lime and this and that and da-da-da. And before you know it, you're spending thousands of dollars on your lawn. And you're like,
that no one sees.
Why am I doing this? Yes. Literally no one cares but me. No one. Not even in my own family. So I'm like, what am I doing all this for? But then if every time I'm looking at it, I'm like, then I'm like, okay, I am doing it for me. And I just have to accept that.
Yeah.
So there you go. I'm trying that out. But now I've done all that like prep type of stuff. And I've smoothed out my log grave. You know, that's more or less, that thing was a hot mess all winter because it was so rainy and I couldn't even smooth it out because it was just clay mud and just water.
Rolled it?
I didn't roll it, but I'm using the tractor to help like smooth it out and stuff. And it's funny because actually, you know, the tractor's heavy, so I would like use that almost like a steamroller and just like drive over top of it just to like pack everything in. But, you know, of course I just dumped a bunch of logs and then I just piled dirt on top of it. And I was like, eventually the dirt's going to settle down in there. But it was funny, once I started to like go over it and stuff like that, the pressure from the tractor, like pushing the dirt down, actually caused a bunch of water to like bubble up out of the soil. So I guess water like worked its way down in there, and it's clay, so it doesn't like
It's got nowhere to go.
So there's just like stagnant water chilling in there with the logs. So when I was driving over top of it, it was like, it was just like seeping all up out of the ground and just like coming
weird.
Out. And I was like, that's crazy. I've never seen that happen before. It was like a spring coming out of the yard.
Oh,
but
wild.
I just, you know, drove over it a bunch and got all the water out of there, packed more dirt down, and now it's not doing it anymore. So I was like, okay, now I'll smooth it out. Seed it a little bit and just let it do its thing. So making progress there. No one cares. And I'm at the point now where my kids, they're 12 and 14.
Oh, wow.
And they're a large 12 and 14. They've got my jeans. So we have this like place.
Everybody set. Knows you don't wear jeans. You wear cargo shorts.
I do wear jeans, but
I know I'm just jean joke.
Yes. But we have a play set that we got when the kids were like, you know, toddlers.
Right.
And like they still can, like it's got swings on it, but I'm like, yeah, they're not like going down this slide and doing like, they're not playing in the little playhouse looking thing. And we actually, I was power washing houses with my dad at the time. This was like pre Goulet pens. So actually, this was a long time ago. I thought it was like a decade ago, but I'm realizing now it was even longer than that. But anyway, I was power washing houses with my dad. Somebody whose house we power washed, they lived out in the boonies. They wanted to get rid of their playset. And they were like, if you can get it out of here, it's yours. And so I was like, free playset. I have kids. Let's do that. So I took it. And so now this thing is like 25 years old probably. And I'm like, okay. I've shored it up. And
you've kept it up though.
I've kept it up. It looks good.
You've stained it.
Like, yeah, I have.
Regular mulch around the
area.
Like,
you know, but it's like now my kids are getting to be large and I'm like, okay, I don't know. Like younger kids, I'm fine. They'd be fine on it. But like my kids, if my two kids are swinging on that thing at the same time and I see the thing like rocking back and forth, I'm like, I either need to like reinvest and shore this thing up or I need to get it out of my life. And it's like the kids aren't really playing on it anymore. So I'm feeling around to see if anybody here at work wants it. But we don't have a lot of like super young kids. here at work anymore for this giant playset. So I don't know. We'll see. I might end up getting rid of that, but I'm still debating because I need to know, like, am I getting rid of it by like breaking it down in a way that somebody can take it and reinstall it?
Or are you burying it in your yard?
Taking a chainsaw to it and throwing it in the woods. Yeah, I could bury it in the yard, but it's like, you know, rot resistant wood. So it's like not going to go anywhere for a long time.
No,
but it'll eventually go down. Anyway, so I'm deciding what to do with that. Let's see here. I am polishing my car headlights. That's pretty exciting. Which is actually not that bad because
I did it before and I sucked at it.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I don't know. I must have done the steps wrong or something like that. It was slightly better, but I don't know what I did wrong. Because you buy the kit or are you doing it with stuff you already have?
I've done both. So I've done it by hand because essentially it's just plastic.
Yeah.
This is like polishing a pen.
Yeah, you just got to step down your abrasive.
Grits. Yeah. So I did it by hand and it took forever. So I was like, I'll buy a kit and I'll just try it.
Yeah.
So I bought the kit. The kit's fine, but it only has like three grades of grit. So it's like, it's probably fine. I just need to get over it. But like when I'm staring at it, I'm like, I can still see scratches, but I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like it looks way better than it did. So I like my truck, I have a 2002 F-250.
Mm.
That thing's got some age on it at this point. And the headlights are like yellow.
Oh, mine too. My CRV is like total cloud.
Yeah. So it's like, we'll give it a shot. And so I polished one of them up. It looks a lot better. Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is worth doing.
I'm like, whatever. It still passes inspection.
Yeah.
It's going to. Yeah. Might not last till the end of the year. We'll see.
Right. Do they test that for inspection? Like the strength of your headlights?
I know that they like adjust headlights, but I'm sure that.
Yeah, they adjust them to make sure that they're not.
But like as long as light gets out of them, like whatever, they're doing their job.
I mean, you can always, if you don't care what they look like, you can always just get stronger bulbs.
Yeah.
That just blast more light to go through the cloudiness of the headlights. So that's an option too.
Honestly, that car is not winning any aesthetic awards anyway.
True.
So.
Well, neither is my truck really, but you know, I don't know. It just felt like, I felt like I wanted to do it and now I've done it. Well, I've done it one.
Yeah, so I've done it once.
One clear headlight now.
I've done it once and I feel like they wore off like within months.
Really?
It was very disheartening. Yeah, I'm sure I did something wrong.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
I might have not done like the final sealant properly because you know, you do go through all the steps and then there's this like juice just put on there at the end. I don't know, maybe I did that
maybe it
poorly.
Depends on which kit you get, because mine was literally just a polishing kit. Like there's no sealant to put over top of it.
Yeah, mine came with
literally
something.
Just sanding it down and then polishing it
I
off.
Did all that, but then it had some like extra crap at the end. I don't know,
to protect it or whatever, like a clear coat kind
probably
of thing. Yeah, I don't know. That was the thing, is like going to like an auto parts store and looking at that kind of stuff, I'm like, they're all marketing crap all over it. And you're like, what am I actually buying here?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm doing that. I finished my Lego Optimus Prime.
Nice.
Which has been good.
That was pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, it's like I would work on it like a bag at a time with Joseph. So I didn't want to just like go building it myself because I wanted to do it with Joseph. So yeah, we just kind of worked it in there and we finished it and it's pretty rad. I was going to bring it in, but then I forgot. So I was going to show it off, but
you happy with it though?
It's so cool.
Nice.
It was a total impulsive buy. Well, it's kind of like you and the Ghostbusters, you know, thing. You're just
I had
like,
to have it.
Oh, this is so cool.
Yeah.
See, I didn't have the toy growing up though. So, you know, it's the kind of thing like I liked toys like that growing up. But it was still pretty fun. Yeah.
Transformers are Eternal.
Yeah.
Like the best toys ever invented.
And Joseph loves robots. Like he loves Lego. He loves robots. So it was like, even though he doesn't know anything about the show, he just, you know, is super into
one of the one of the movies I recently bought was Bumblebee, which is the movie that came like basically after they made all the Transformers movies.
Yeah.
They made Bumblebee, which was kind of like a prequel to all of those.
Okay.
It's easily the best Transformers movie.
Really?
In the modern days. Yeah. So if you ever did want to watch a movie, that one's the one to watch.
Okay.
Great soundtrack. The whole thing takes place in the 80s because they needed to justify the Beetle, you know?
Right.
It's just fantastic. It's just pretty much just Bumblebee with two bad guys, not a crap ton of wild craziness happening.
Okay.
It's solid. It definitely is solid.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. I'll have to check that out.
But
I haven't seen a single Transformer movie.
I saw the first one. It was just I heard it was like the best one of the bunch, but to me, it was just so hard to follow and overwhelming. Like the visuals, I'm just like, what? It's just like a bunch of hunks of metal all intertwined. Like, yeah. I don't even know where someone's head is.
Mm-hmm.
Question, where is Optimus Prime going to live? Is it going to live in Joseph's room?
Or I have no idea.
Going to bring it into the office?
I did not put it behind it. I might put it on my desk.
I mean, the Saturn V has been there for a while. Saturn V's
not going anywhere.
Well, maybe it needs a friend.
I think it does need a friend.
All right. Well,
you can have Optimus Prime with the Saturn V. Why not?
I
have the Emmett mech as well.
That's back
from
there.
The Lego movie.
Mm-hmm.
So Emmett mech and Optimus Prime could hang out with the Saturn V.
I don't disagree
with
that.
Sounds like a good strategy.
You have my full endorsement.
What I should do is rotate out because I have a ton of Lego Technic sets at home. I should just rotate out some, freshen it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was fun. And then speaking of Legos, so. There's a story here. I'm in the middle of working on this washer dryer pedestal thing that I think I mentioned last week. So that is in process, and it got to the point this weekend where I was like, all right, I think I've built the thing. Now I need to start installing the thing. So it's like basically like a piece of built-in furniture at this point that I'm like attaching to the walls. I have to take out the you know, molding and everything to like fit it all in there. So I had to like disconnect the washer dryer, get it all out of there. So it was like strategically a couple days ahead of time, I was like, all right, Rachel, let's do all our laundry. Let's wash all our sheets, all that kind of stuff. Because I know like the pressure's on once we, you know, pull out this washer dryer.
You should probably
thing.
Turn the pressure off though.
Right. Exactly. So we started that this weekend, and then Ellie wants to go to the amusement park because it just opened up this weekend. So I'm trying to like convince her why no, we can't, because I'm in the middle of this project. Thankfully, we were able to get her together with a friend. That was fine. But then Joseph wanted to go to Bricks and Minifigs and Second and Charles to look for used Legos because he wants to look for like, especially he's been really into like the Hero Factory and the Bionicle. So like stuff that's not made anymore. And I'm like, great. So, but he's like into the kind of dumpster dive Lego thing.
Nice.
He's like bought stuff on eBay and he's had some good luck. So he's really enjoying that. And I'm like, all right. So I was like, I'll make you a deal. I was like, I'll take you to these places, but you're going to help me with the washer dryer pedestal.
Fair
like,
is fair.
You can help me out. You'll save me some time. We'll use that time to go do the Lego thing. So he helped me out for a solid like 4 or 5 hours.
Wow.
You know, like working on the pedestal thing, painting the whole inside of it and everything. So
oh, dang.
That helped. That was on Saturday. And then we went out to, you know, Bricks and Minifigs and Second and Charles. And
I also
Lego
went
stuff.
To Second and Charles this weekend.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
When did you go?
Maybe this
we
was
passed each other.
This was Sunday.
Okay.
Because we talked about going Saturday and we didn't. And then I was like, we should go. Or maybe it was Saturday. Either way, I bought a movie that I already had.
Oh.
Yep. I bought Star Wars Force Awakens on what I thought was a 4K disc, because normally those are black and Blu-rays are blue cases.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It just happened to be a Blu-ray that was in a black case.
Oh.
But it was $11.99. I'm like, oh, what a steal.
Mm.
You already have this one, buddy.
Can you return it? Like,
it's $11.99. It's whatever. I still own it. I put it up in the attic with the rest.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it's fine. Felt stupid, though.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like there with Joseph, but I'm like, what is there for me to do? Because like he wants to go there just to literally, they have like a giant table of old Legos. And
at
you're like
Bricks and Minifigs.
At both.
At both. Oh,
Second
okay,
and Charles
yeah,
has okay. the same thing too, where it's just like a table filled with old Legos.
Yeah.
And you have like bags or cups or whatever, and you just fill it with whatever, and then you pay by the whatever the amount is that you filled in there. So I'm sitting and I'm just like bored to death. So,
at Second and Charles?
Yeah.
Brian, that's one of the most fun stores to be around. They have tons of books. They have vinyl records. They have comic books, video games, action figures.
See, like, I don't collect any of that stuff.
It's still fun to look at. They even have like vintage toys from the 90s that we used to have.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, so we started out Bricks and Minifigs, and I was like, okay.
That can get boring
I'm
quick.
Literally
I've
just
been
sitting
there before.
There.
Yeah. I'm with you there.
So I was like, you know what? I've thought about, have you seen the Lego like art, like mosaic things? Where it's basically like a plate and a bunch of little studs.
Yeah, usually there's like, you know, three different designs you can do, something like that. Yeah.
But they're like not cheap. And I was like, there's definitely plenty of studs. And if you're like buying it by the bag, you can fill a lot of freaking studs in a little bag. And I was like, well, if I'm going to be sitting at Bricks and Minifigs for like an hour and a half anyway, why don't I just sort through and find all the studs and do a mosaic. So that's what I did the whole time. I was just sorting through a table looking for a bunch of one piece studs.
How long were you there?
Oh, we were there for a while. Joseph's not messing around.
That sounds like a long time.
It was a long time. My fingers were sore at the end of it because I was like picking up just these little individual studs and pieces the whole time.
So, oh my God. Could you have just like waited in the car?
I guess, but you know, I'm like trying to be there with Joseph. And,
yeah.
And it was the kind of thing like once I was already there and I was looking for studs.
Yeah.
And plus like he's looking for stuff too.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of like on the lookout for things that he wants.
Oh,
we're both
wow.
sort of looking through it. So, you know, but it ended up being kind of fun. And then the funny thing is like these little studs don't take up any space. So I had like a whole cup of studs and then he had his bag and I was like, you know, remember how like the whole like rocks and then the smaller rocks
and the sand and all that.
So like he had his whole bag of stuff and I just took all my studs and just like
they went right
poured it into
in.
His bag and shook it around. I was like, it literally just fills in the empty space.
Oh,
so
that's
it's like
amazing.
Free studs.
Free studs.
And a bunch of like little Lego Technic like joint pieces, like the little blue and the black ones and stuff like that. So I was like, well, I have a lot of Lego Technic. Let me just pick up all those that I find too.
More bang for your buck.
Ton of little Lego pieces now that were essentially free. So I was like, well, I'm already here anyway.
Why not?
Get some free Legos. So that's what I did at Bricks and Minifigs.
And
then that's what I also did at Second and Charles. So it's kind of like, well, I'm already in Lego finding mode.
Nice.
So that's what we did. And then we ate out together at Arby's.
Nice.
Got myself a French dip.
We
just talked about this.
Well,
because you mentioned that was your go-to,
right.
And I was like, that's
well, the crazy
what
thing was, again. We also went to Arby's right after Second and Charles, where I got a French dip.
That's crazy.
That's wild.
That must have been on Sunday, because I went on Saturday.
I really don't remember.
We were there like till close, so it was like right.
Oh no, this was right around lunchtime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's eerie.
Well, it's really close to my house too.
It's not close to mine.
Yeah, I know.
But the Arby's is like right there. So
yeah.
It's natural.
It used to have a tree in it. I was really upset when they did the remodel.
Yeah.
Arby's is still a fast food restaurant that you don't feel weird eating inside of.
Yeah. It's like not gross.
No.
Like most other restaurants. Yeah.
It's pretty pleasant.
And the manager there was super nice. Like very cheery, great customer service. And I was like, I will come back here.
It wasn't this
just
last
made
time.
Made it the whole experience. Yeah.
But the previous time, there was a manager there that was just like hunting for discounts to give us. He was just like, oh, you know what? Here, give him this. Here, type this in. And he was just like randomly just giving us a bunch of coupons. We're like, oh my God,
that's
thank
cool.
you. Yeah.
That's cool. Awesome. So that was fun. So don't know what I'm going to do with that. Joseph was building Legos for the rest of the weekend after that. But yeah, the washer dryer pedestal thing. So as it stands right now, and I do have a couple of pictures to share with everybody so we can include these. The whole thing is built. So like that's what it looked like previously.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of the frame of it. But then I have the whole thing built out now, and it's like in place.
Wow.
So it's very, very solid. I'm going to have like laundry baskets underneath for like the kids' shoes and stuff like that. So it's almost at the point where I can put the washer and dryer on it. But I have some like final fitting to do, and I got to do like a little quarter round molding just to like seal up the little like crack along the wall.
So like I've got to do that, but like lint and all that stuff.
But I didn't think about that when I bought all the rest of the supplies. So it's like after work today, I've got to
go
and get quarter round at the store because it's like once the washer and dryer is up there, I can't like install quarter round behind it because there's nowhere to move. So it's like I got to go do that now because otherwise. Like each day that goes by, I'm like watching my laundry basket pile up and it's like feeling the pressure.
Yeah.
But anyway.
That looks great though.
Thank you.
So
it's been a project.
After that, it's time for the getting them up top.
Yes. Which I talked to Rachel and the kids and they seem pretty motivated to like all four of us as a family, like we each take a corner and lift them up there.
All
that
right.
seems to be the plan.
Here
I
we go.
Like, wasn't going to bank on that, but we did the math on it and it's like the washer is like 280 pounds. And so we were like, okay, it's like 70 pounds a piece. And we're like, that's manageable.
Yeah.
Like Ellie was like, I can lift 150 pounds. And I'm like, sure. Not like 2 feet in the air though. But yeah, anyway, so they seemed confident that they can do it. We'll try and we'll see how it
goes. Just do the washer first.
We'll do the heavier one first and see how it goes. But I don't know. We'll find out. I'll have more to report.
If you need to, you can use a simple machine for the dryer like that.
I do have hoists and snatch blocks and all kinds of things. But like, there's nothing to like attach anything to.
No.
So I would literally need to like build a frame to be able to attach a hoist to because it's like in my house. I'm not going to just like, if it was in the garage, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll just screw into like one of the joists. But no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Should be an adventure. Anyway, that's all I got.
There we go. Adventures are being had.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. All right, I want to thank you all for watching. Please leave us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Ask us questions. Ask any questions specific you might have for Janaea, because she's going to be here next week.
She will.
Not me. Check out GouletPens.com for fountain pen ink and paper needs. And subscribe to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the places that we post the things. Now, I have a few different directions that I could go with today's random fact. So I have one that's like more of a philosophical question. And then I have some other just like random facts that I could get into. What do you feel like?
Let's go philosophical. This seems different and fresh and unique.
Okay.
And challenging.
So I came across this and I thought it was like, this actually is kind of fitting to fountain pens a little bit. So the question was about, is water wet? Which, you know, ink is mostly water. Mm-hmm. So I was like, is ink actually wet? Okay. So here's the debate that goes on. Okay. So with water, and we can replace that with ink, there's an ongoing debate if water is wet or if it just makes other things wet. So the answer can vary depending on how one defines wetness. And I thought this was like such a Brian answer to a Drew didn't ask kind of a question. So in a general sense, we consider something to be wet if it's covered by or saturated with a liquid, usually mm-hmm. water. Mm-hmm. From this perspective, water itself isn't wet because it is the liquid that makes other materials wet. Mm-hmm. Wetness is a description of our experience of water. What happens to us when we come into contact with water in such a way that it impinges on our state of being? We or our possessions get wet. However, from a more scientific standpoint, when water molecules are surrounded by other water molecules, they exhibit behaviors like cohesion and adhesion that could be seen as a form of wetness since they are in contact with liquid. So you have to like drill down a layer deeper into what it is. So while our water molecules sticking to each other is what gives water its property to make things wet. So I think it really depends on, do you consider, you know, the context of the wetness that we're talking about here. Does wetness require a substance to be altered by the addition of a liquid? Then the water itself isn't wet. It merely enables other materials to be wet. But on the other hand, considering the interactions at the molecular level, you could argue that water is always in a state that we can associate with wetness. So if you take that and apply that to ink as well, it just made me think, like when we talk about an ink being wet, like wet writing or whatever, it's like, what even is that?
Yeah. I'm trying to, you know, my brain immediately goes to analogies. That's just kind of how I process things. And if I take analogies and think like, okay, well, what about red paint is red and it also makes things red. Mm-hmm. Salt is salty and it makes things salty. Mm-hmm. Water is wet and it makes things wet. Like that to me, there seems to be enough analogies to kind of like justify the fact that water is indeed wet.
And what you said, consider water to be in and of itself wet.
Yeah, especially since you said scientifically, you know, with the cohesion and everything like that, that
you could argue that
it's actively wetting itself mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. like actively. And anything, and if those molecules get removed from the water, they stop being wet. Mm. So to me, it does sound like water is consistently wetting and re-wetting itself in perpetuity.
Yeah. I think I probably fall a little more into that camp. Water itself, it is also surrounded by water, which is wet. So it's wetting itself, you know, a little bit.
Yeah. Because you could remove those molecules and they would, you know, eventually no longer be wet. They would turn into vapor.
If you remove the water molecules, then it's not water anymore.
Well, they're still, but that means they're no longer wet.
They wouldn't be wet if you remove the water molecules, but were they ever wet to begin with is the question.
Atomically, they're still like the same, they're the same parts. They just change when you remove them from their environment.
I guess I could say it fall for me going with the analogy thing. It's like, can you see darkness? Because darkness is like the absence of there being any light there.
Yeah.
So like, are you actually seeing anything, or it's just more of it's the absence of seeing something? So like, is darkness actually a thing that you're seeing?
Well, yeah, that's kind of like saying is black a color?
Right.
Like, or it's, Or no, white, actually. Mm-hmm. White is the absence of color. Black is all colors. Yeah, like white is white a color. That would be the debate, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's a bit different than, like, you know, kind of trying to differentiate, is water a thing that happens to things, or is it the thing itself, you know?
Yeah, the wetness at least. Yeah.
You know, that'd be like saying more like, is light bright, or does it just light up other things, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd probably lean more into the, yeah, it's wet.
Okay.
But what about wet water? That stuff you said the firefighters use to put out.
Yes, you can increase the wetness of water by adding surfactants.
So that's definitely wet.
Yes.
But added extra wet, the bonus wetness, wet water.
Yeah, it all has to do with like the adhesion cohesion thing. So,
okay. I don't
know. It is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fun.
Interesting. So, yeah, leave in the comments. Does any of this make sense to you, or are you totally lost? Because we saved this for the end.
Speaking of fun facts, last week you bestowed upon me some deliciously delightful 1984 movie facts, which I had a great time with. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
One of the movies I mentioned was Police Academy, which is a 1984 mm-hmm. film that was not in the top 10 highest grossing films, I don't think.
It was. Yeah.
It was. Okay.
It was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I received a postcard, a Police Academy postcard, you know, after that.
Okay.
That just had a quote from the movie and said, you know, made in 1984 on it. No name. Don't know who it was from. Definitely a listener. Upon closer inspection, I realized this was not a postcard. Someone had cut the front off of a VHS sleeve.
Oh, my gosh.
And made the back a postcard and just mailed me the VHS cover. So, which is amazing, but also, like, you destroyed your VHS sleeve. Come on.
Maybe the tape went bad or something, and all they had left was a sleeve.
It's possible.
So they gave the sleeve new life.
I have that VHS in my living room. Like, I know it's right up there, which is why, to be fair, why I knew 9 out of 10 of those movies is because in my den, most of them are up on my shelf.
Yeah.
So I see them every day.
That's fair.
But yeah, that was one of the more interesting pieces of, you know, customer/audience mail that I've received.
That's pretty cool.
For sure.
That's pretty cool. People do listen to what we say on here.
Yes, even at the bitter end, apparently.
There you go. So there you go. That's it. You'll see Drew next week. You won't see me, but Janae will be here. Right here. She'll sit here.
Right there.
There you go. Awesome. Thanks so much for watching. Thank you so much for watching, everybody. And right on.